This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network, welcome to another, what I think will be a great episode of Who's Next? I am one of your co-hosts, Andy Athen, back with you to break down another month of television for the NXT brand of WWE. And I, as always, am not here alone. I have my partner in crime for this podcast, the one who carries the load here, so to speak. It makes me look good. Logan Crosland. Logan, how are you?
I am doing great tonight, Andy. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm very excited because we are on the precipice, on the cusp of this brand's WrestleMania Stand and Deliver. So we're going to be talking about a lot of build. We're not going to go full into our Stand and Deliver picks. We're going to actually drop a bonus episode next week, right before Stand and Deliver, with our predictions and what we feel is going to happen, maybe coming out of that and WrestleMania weekend itself for the men and women of the NXT brand. So, but tonight we're going to break down these episodes because we had some really good stuff. We had a one of their, I guess, branded, you want to say, shows it's just an episode, but they kind of make it an extra special one by giving it a name and making it like an event, like what would have been like a PLE or a takeover. But yeah, what do you think of the last month so far on the brand, Logan?
Yeah, I think it's been really strong. A lot of good build to what will be Stand and Deliver eventually. They did a really good build to Roadblock, which is the episode that you're talking about. They'll throw one in pretty much once a period between PLEs, pretty much. They'll do like the PLE, and then like halfway between the two, they'll do like a special episode with some big matches. So they built pretty well to that as well. But yeah, just a really strong month of stuff, so I'm looking forward to where we go forward, and I'm looking forward to Stand and Deliver for sure.
Yeah, it's a good way for them to keep the names, because a lot of these are old pay-per-view names, whether they're WWE, WCW, so it keeps that kind of in the, like, you know, Great American Bash they've done. They, you know, Roadblock was a pay-per-view, I think, at one point. You know, I'm sure there'll be other ones, but yeah, it's a good way to, and you know that there's going to be, like, kind of, like, bigger matches that night, not really squashes or showcases. It's all going to be like feud based or title matches. So it kind of brings some excitement to those Tuesday night episodes that they do. Not saying that the other Tuesday night episodes aren't good, but there's a lot, it's a lot more like, you know, feud ending or feud starting, or, you know, the build up. It's a build up to that. And then they kind of reset after that a little bit. So
exactly.
All right, so we're going to go back to the episode that aired on February 21st, and it opened up with Trick Williams making his entrance, cutting a promo on how he's going to prove that he can do more than just talk, and he'll back up every word he says. Ilya Dragunov comes out, and he's got his long robe. He orchestrates his imaginary band, but he's going to beat that big-headed bum into oblivion. He's glad, mate. You know, Trick says he's glad that pain makes Ilya feel alive, because he's going to be on cloud nine after this ass whooping. So it leads us to Dragunov versus Trick. We get Williams starting off with a cheap shot before the bell, but Dragunov takes him right down with a side headlock, rolling around for the advantage. Trick gets the ropes, but Ilya stays on him. Williams into the corner, grinding his forearm against Dragunov's face, but then he gets turned around into chops. Back to the headlock, shot off, shoulder back, pass the side, hip toss, right back into a headlock. Trick reverses up to a pin for two to throw the SAR off, and follows it with a cheap shot to the eye. Slam and taunting gets an up kick. Huge back fist. Amelia sets up a corner knee and cover for two. Kick to the back with some chops, whips into another knee. Dragunov pops up, only to get his leg kicked out from under him. Then we get Williamson and Yula crashing to the floor, clutching his neck. Then we get JD McDonough walking up the ramp. Trick takes Dragunov back inside for a near fall, and we go to break. So back from commercial, Williams works over Ilya, and then JD has joined on commentary. We get a waistlock, back elbows, whip across, and a huge discus lariat from Dragunov, but his neck keeps him from capitalizing. Punches from Trick, gets a big enziguri from Ilya. He fires up, struggling to his feet. The red-faced Russian god of war, running knee to the corner, up to the second, bombs away, knee drop connects, huge falling elbow to the face, lying in wait, and we get Ilya Dragunov winning by pinfall via the Torpedo Moscow. So I thought this was a good match. Some of the best we've seen from Trick Williams so far. What do you think of this match?
Yeah, this is definitely one of Trick Williams' strongest matches. He hadn't had a ton that went too long. I feel like they actually gave him some good time here with a guy that could carry him pretty well. I mean, Dragunov's one of the best on the brand, without a doubt, if not one of the just best in the company in general. Trick hung with him for sure, but Dragunov really did the Lord's work in this one for sure as well. So, yeah, very strong opener. I mean, it's what they do. Every NXT episode seems to have a pretty strong opener. So they did it again on this one.
Yeah. That's one thing I love about this. We don't get no big, 20-minute promo. We don't get a interruption. It's just pretty much, it's usually maybe a little something, and then right into a match. And the match is usually one of the best of the night. So that's another thing I love about these episodes. So we get a promo video from Jinder Mahal about how Braun Breaker's title reign is coming to an end. And we have Fallon Henley leading a message for Brooks Jensen, apologizing for ruining Valentine's Day. Josh Briggs rolls up and tells the two of them are all he has, and he's not getting in the middle. Then he tells Henley to drop it while she whines about the particulars of Kiana James' behavior. She leaves convinced she has to do this in person. Send me back from commercial. We get Miko Satomura leading a training class at the Performance Center. We get Roxanne joining at the last second, and Miko runs them through calisthenics and basic ring exercising. Finally, after 1,000 squats, only Perez remains. She goes to leave, and Miko says that was only the warm-up, and they cut away. We get Tyler Bate out for an entrance, gets on the mic, he greets the crowd, says he's not often a man of many words, but he can't help with sense some good vibes, so he'd come out here and share some gratitude. Since coming to the USA and going full-time, the love he's received has infused a brand new passion in him. And he wants to thank everyone from the bottom of his heart, even when he came up short against Braun Breaker. But he believes in the natural unfolding of things and the timing. So he suggests that we are about to embark on a mystical journey together and then enter the schism. Joe Gacy tries to tell Tyler that they're kindred spirits, but Bates says he's not drinking whatever he's selling. They warn him to be careful who he surrounds himself with and accuse him of abandoning his family in the UK. And about what they gave Thea Hall, a glimpse of what life is with them, and maybe Bate would like to feel that right now. Ava Rain says Bay is not alone, but they are four roots, one tree. And we get Chase U running in to make the save, and we go to break. So we get a few, a little build up here. We get, a little preview with Jinder talking smack, the love story. I don't know if it's really a love triangle, I guess, with the whole Fallon, Brooks, Kiana thing going on. We get Miko Satomura with the Roxanne thing, which I think may be part of the storytelling. Maybe, I don't know. We could talk about that when we get there in another episode. And then we get this Tyler Bate, who seems to be kind of partnering up a little bit with Thea Hale a bit. So what do you think of this these little segments that we had here before we get to this match?
Yeah, strong segments for sure. Jinder's pointing out that Braun is starting to get booed a little bit, so that might have him a little shaken by the fans, that the fans aren't super behind him. So that's just kind of trying to get into his head. The love triangle, rectangle, line, whatever you want to call it at this point.
Parallelogram, whatever.
Yeah, I'm saying parallelogram, just whatever the heck it's supposed to be at this point. Continues to just be wacky and crazy and never seems to really end up being anything, but we'll see how it keeps going forward. I like the Miko training session. It probably might have been part of a story, maybe her trying to wear down Perez a little bit before they get to their match for sure. And then Tyler's promo was good, but I felt like it was a little weird. He started talking about like mystical journeys and stuff like that. So I think he had the good British weed in the back before he cut this promo for sure. But having him aligned with Chase U can only give a good rub to Chase U. So I like that for sure.
Yeah. And if they're going to take on, the schism, Chase U needs another guy to help him out at least. So I could definitely see at least in the short term. So
then he doesn't have to join them, but he can just kind of be like a helper along the way.
Mm-hmm. So then we get Chase U, which is Andre Chase and Duke Hudson versus the Dyad, which is Jagger Reed and Rip Fowler. So we get the match story in progress. Chase, you are running hot, but the dyad turns things around and we're Chase over at length. Duke Cousin gets the hot tag, comes in heavy, throwing Reed into Fowler with a belly-to-belly suplex. Andre tags back in, double teams on Jagger. Big super kick lays him out, but he can't keep him down. Duke back in, right hands for everybody. Rip pulls him to the floor, and Hudson lays him out before Reed dives on, and we go to break. Back from commercial. Chase beating Reed down the corner to the point of being warned off. He takes Fowler out with a two for one. When he runs in, whip across, big boot for Rip, waist lock, standing switch. Jagger with a back elbow, but Andre hits a swing neck breaker. Orihara moonsault takes Fowler out. Back in, diving crossbody on Reed. Rip it up, breaks up, trading punches in the middle of the ring to their feet, and we get the Chase U boots. Tag to Hudson. Chase goes to the floor to save Thea Hall from Ava Rain. Slingshot German suplex from Duke, but the Dyad are able to take advantage of the chaos and hit a throat thrust. A throat thrust sets it up, and the Dyad win by pinfall with a double code breaker on Duke Hudson. Post-match, we get Duke yelling at Andre for tending to Thea and walks off on his own. I thought this was a lot of fun, this match. I love the Dyad. I was not happy when they got repackaged, but I think they needed it because I thought they were actually, you know, headed up to the main roster. But I do like this. I like these guys in the ring. You know, Chase U, I like it. The only thing I worry about Andre Chase is he an Adam Rose? Like, hugely over here, and then he's going to fall flat on the main roster if he gets up there. But overall, though, I did enjoy this match. What did you think?
Yeah, I think it's all about presentation on that one, because I feel like he was – I mean, I think they were in his hometown at Vengeance Day, but I think they were pretty over with the crowd there. But that also might have been like a hometown kind of thing. But yeah, I really enjoyed this match. I enjoyed the Dyad as well. I was equally not happy when they got repackaged and thrown with Gacy, but I think they've knocked it out of the park with their parts in this so far. So I can't at all disagree with them doing that at the same time. But the match was very good. You can kind of tell that something was awry when he was doing the spelling stomps. I feel like he kind of stopped after he got to he started to slow down and he noticed that Ava was outside kind of trying to get at Thea, and Thea was kind of cowering. So that was going to lead to something. And Duke obviously got left in the ring by himself. But this starts a whole thing with Duke kind of not trusting Mr. Chase anymore. He kind of asks after the match, is this a university or a charity? Because he keeps thinking that he's paying too much attention to Thea and giving her too much attention along the way. So this is kind of starting to put a rift between Duke and Andre. So,
well, I feel like every week it's something else with them, right? One week Duke is mad at Andre, and next week Andre's mad. You know, it's kind of like back and forth a little bit.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's like kind of like already it's like, all right, come on, let's get the Duke Hudson turn or whatever the hell is going to happen. They've grown on me a little bit. You know, I know you were much higher on Andre than I was going in, but, you know, I'm kind of like at that point, like, all right, will they, won't they? Let's, all right, people, let's go. Let's get this story moving and move on. Okay. So, I mean, I do enjoy it, but I kind of think, like, every week, like, is this it? Oh, no, it's not it. This week, we get an apology. Then we get, sorry, this is what I meant. Or, you know, you should be, it's like, enough with this, okay? It's kind of, they're dragging it out of it.
Yeah, I don't think it's much more long for this world. I think it's kind of one of those that may be done by Stand and Deliver, kind of maybe after, a little bit after Stand and Deliver. So
yeah.
I don't think it's much longer for this world.
All right. So then we get footage from earlier in the day from Robert Stone trying to cajole Von Wagner into opening up when Tony D and Stax roll up to complain about having their title shot stolen. They bicker, and Wagner ends up giving Tony D a match, much to Robert Stone's chagrin. We get Drew Gulak and Charlie Dempsey interviewed backstage. Gulak says Hank Walker isn't his friend, just some guy who says he wants it, but just because you say you want something doesn't mean you'll get it. He came to NXT to find the best of the best, and that's just not Walker because he's too nice of a guy. You can't be afraid to step on throats to get what you want, and that's Charlie Dempsey. We get JC Jane making her entrance as we go to break. Back from commercial, we get a Sol Ruka promo reel about how fun challenge is. Then we get Indy Hartwell versus JC Jane. We got a collar and elbow tie-up. Hartwell goes for a wrist lock, but then JC cuts her off with strikes. Whip reverse, whip into the corner. short arm lariats follow. JC ducks the third and hits a neck breaker. Follows up with a pair of sentons. Nope. And then Indy desperate elbows from her knees to get to her feet, jockeying for position over the ropes. And Jane yanks her neck over the top. And we get knees into a snap mare, kick to the back, and a soul butt to the face. Only the good for two. JC's getting frustrated and talking trash. Three quarters Nelson applied. Indy gets to her feet, so JC shifts to a sleeper hold on her back, wrenching it in, but Indy won't give. Back to her feet, and JC takes her down again. Big spine buster, cover for two, throwing Jane out to the apron for an uppercut and a boot before pulling her back in. A fireman's carry, JC slips out and posts her, throwing her into the turnbuckles. Karen Senton follows with a big boot after, and then she's jawing at Indy, lying her up, and then Gigi Dolan is here and attacks JC from behind. JC gets the win by DQ. Dolan and Jane brawl to the back. Gigi is firmly in control. So, you know, I know you pop for this because you're beloved Gigi, who I'm a fan of too as well. But I do kind of like. I was a little surprised JC is getting pushed a little as the aggressor, so to speak. But I don't think she'd be believable as the face, which is why I think they're going this way. Because Gigi, you know, I think has a little more experience, but I think JC is just better at being, for lack of a better term, a bitch. Mm-hmm. You know, Gigi's kind of like that crazy chick. You know, JC's just like, oh yeah, she could be that. She just naturally comes off as a stuck up bitch. And I'm sure she's a delightful person backstage. So, you know, I'm just saying the character, JC Jane. But what did you think of this match?
Yeah, beautiful human backstage, but just an absolute turd when it comes to being on screen. No, but I was thinking it was smart to kind of put JC with one of the more experienced girls on the NXT roster. Indy's been there a while, so this is one of JC's first singles matches, like really on her own. I know she said singles matches when she was in Toxic Attraction, but this is her kind of establishing herself, so it's good to put her in there with somebody that can lead her along and, you know, can hang with her move for move and stuff like that. But yeah, this was clearly just to set up something with Gigi and JC Cohen down the road. It was good to see Gigi interfere and kind of jump all over and get some revenge for getting her head kicked in on Ding Dong Hello when they did the whole breakup. So obviously leading to something else, but I thought the match was fine up until that point, but it was nothing more than to kind of put JC over as the new kind of the new heel that's on her own. So good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I immediately like up to like the top, like, I guess two or three heels for women mm-hmm. on the brand, I guess almost immediately. I mean, cause there's kind of a void right now up there with the exception of maybe, you know, I mean, I'm not counting a few others cause they're more like in tag teams right now in other situations, but I'm talking about in terms of singles right now, it's like who is there for your top heels? Tiffany?
Yes, probably Stratton and her is the top two.
I mean, Cora hasn't been on TV all that much. I think she's battling an injury or something.
Gotta be for as long as she's been off, for sure.
So you know, they needed heels and they immediately, like, you know, she's up there. So I and she's running with it, so which is really good. So then we go back to the Mako and Roxanne training footage where we see them working on lockup, striking, and neck grappling. Satomura working hard until she can budge her with a shoulder block. She tells Roxanne, good wrestling comes from the heart, not the bicep, and she'll see her in 2 weeks. We get Gallus shown walking backstage. We go to break. Back from the break, Zoe Stark is interviewed. You know, I think she'll do a better job against Mako than Roxanne Perez. A bit of commentary later points out she's questioning the validity of Mako getting a shot and setting up a match on her own against Mako next week. Then we get Inoue and Blade versus Gallus. Blade and Coffee to start, collar and elbow into the ropes, dirty break with a shove off the ropes, cartwheel evasion into a dropkick from Malik, but Mark sidesteps and tags Wolfgang in. Elbows and clubs, quick tagged, Blade on the wrong side of town as he gets worked over. Fighting back with punches, Coffee drops him with a slam and taunts Inoue. Some folks come to ringside with a cake, and the distraction is enough for Idris to make the tag off the ropes. Big lariat, elbow drop, and then we get Wolfgang tagging in, and that's about all she wrote. Gallus wins by pinfall with the forearm-assisted Emerald Flossian on Malik Blade. The Bakers bring in the cake and tell Gallus to celebrate the two-year anniversary of them losing the titles to Pretty Deadly, and Gallus beat the two guys down. Pretty Deadly then slides into the ring with chairs and beat up the champs. They rearrange the stairs and pick Wolfgang up, spine buster into the steps. pretty deadly poses with the titles. So I thought the match was okay. You know, Anofi and Blade were kind of on. Mm-hmm. I do kind of really enjoy Gallus. I was very excited to see them because the you know, limited amount of times I saw them on the UK NXT, I did really like these guys. And I do love the kind of the mean streak, I guess, so to speak, a seriousness of the beatdown pretty deadly gives them, because I think they need that once in a while. They can't be like, oh, I'm a Brit, Froppy Toppy, this, that, the other thing. You know, they can't do that all the time. They need to, like, put the boots to somebody. And I thought this was really effective. What are your thoughts on this this match and stuff?
Yeah, the match was pretty much a squash. I like seeing Gallus beat up on some smaller guys like this. The other thing about Gallus that, you know, kind of stands out to me is they hardly ever use the same finisher to end matches. It seems like they always kind of bust out something new. I think they've done this running forearm into the Emerald Flosion before, but like in the match we'll talk about later, they bust out something else as kind of the finishing move. So I feel like they never really do the same thing in consecutive matches or anything like that. But yeah, it was good to see a mean streak from Pretty Deadly. They're usually kind of jokey and aren't too serious in most of their segments. That's kind of what they're best at. They're kind of good at being the goofballs that get beat up and kind of pushed around. So but I think they asked them to have a proper chin wag later, so I'm looking forward to that.
Okay. All right, so we get Dava Kato cutting a promo about how Apollo Crews has forgotten his past, and he's upset that Apollo came back to NXT without thinking of him. Crews can't stand on his own, has no future without him. Then we get Tony D and Stax making an entrance as we go to break. Back from commercial, Stevie Tana breaks into the broadcast and debuts her roster randomizer, which selects Lyra Valkyria. She gives us a breakdown of Lyra's whole Morrigan gimmick and says that she's talented, but eventually she'll cross paths with her, and Valkyria is no match for her forward thinking. Then we get Tony D versus Von Wagner. We get Tony D in with headlock and punches. Wagner stampedes him into the corner for her shoulder blocks, whip across, big knee punches, scoops, and a slam, sets up an elbow drop. Then we get Tony sidestepping a charge, starts to get back into the ring, back into it. Big Larry connects, belly-to-belly suplex. The Don is running hot. Larry in the ropes, whip across, huge spinning spine buster connects. Back suplex lift, and then we get Tony D winning by pinfall with the moment of silence. Post-match, we get Tony D interviewed in the ring. He talks about Stax's loyalty and choosing to have his back rather than taking the open challenge, and he appreciates that. But Dominic Dijak doesn't get it, and they've been at this for a couple of months. He thinks it's time to put an end. He and Stax have thought a couple of ways to make Dijak disappear, but he's going to handle this in the ring. One last time at NXT Roadblock in a jailhouse street fight. When it's all said and done, he's going to put Dijak into solitary confinement. But for now, he has got 1 week to answer. So, I mean, this match was fine. I mean, Wagner's kind of spinning his wheels right now, being fodder. I do really love Tony D. He had the character work. His in-ring is getting better. And having adding Stax now to this and kind of elevating his character a little bit in the way Tony has really been treating him, like almost like an equal, pretty much now that once he got made, so to speak, as the underboss. I really see some good stuff in the future for these guys. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I've been really impressed with Stax and Tony D the last month or two that we've been doing this. I definitely think there'll be some heavy stock ups when we get to that point in the end of the show. I've been real into their whole thing. On the opposite side of the spectrum, I always have a review on my screen when we go through these, but I'll just read the sentence because this is exactly how I feel. This Wagner story needs to wrap up already, as he continues to be one of the driest stars that is regularly presented anywhere on wrestling TV. So whoever this guy that writes this has it nailed perfectly how I would put it out. This whole thing with Mr. Stone needs to work itself out. They need to do whatever they're going to do. It's obviously leading to something. I don't know what it will be, but I want that to happen already, because if he can't get whatever that is over, this might be somebody that you need to cut bait with. I know he's second generation He'll probably have a little bit more rope than a lot of people will, but yeah, he needs to start proving me something, or I'm going to kind of give up on him.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's somebody that they may string along for a while. I mean, you know, look at Omos, look at Dabakato. I mean, Shanky hasn't been on TV for a while, but he's got size. I mean, I know Vince is not, quote, air quotes, there. But he's somebody that maybe they think that they could bring him. If they do bring him up, they bring him up, like I mentioned, like in a bodyguard role, and maybe he can learn and work house shows and things like that until he's really, really ready to get in there, because he's a big body, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, he's shown flashes, but yeah, kind of like whenever I see him, I'm like, oh, this guy again.
he's not bad in ring. He's just, there's nothing that stands out about him at all. He's not a good talker. He's okay in the ring, kind of like I said. But yeah, he needs to be like a strong, silent, like, killer bodyguard, or like a big for some other smaller guy. You know, he needs to be somebody's like heavy.
Yeah,
I think so.
Exactly. So we get Nikhil Lyons interviewed backstage on crutches. She said her surgery was successful. Doctor said it'll be 11 to 12 months that she's out, but she wants to be back in less than a year. She doesn't know who attacked her because she was attacked from behind. Tiffany Stratton rolls up, tells Nikita that nobody cares, and she rejects the notion that she would have attacked her because she's not important enough. And besides, if she had attacked her, she'd be out forever. Tam Paxley is in the dojo when Ivy Nile rolls up. Paxley wishes her luck, but doesn't leave with her. Ivy asks what's up. Tam agrees that they're a team, but and reluctantly leaves with her, and we go to break. Back from commercial, Kamala Hayes tells Trick Williams he's proud of him. He's got to stick around and watch the main event. Tyler Bate walks up and also tells Trick that he's proud of him. He wants him to remember that good timber doesn't grow at ease. The stronger the storm, the stronger the trees. Williams says that that's good Dr. Seuss stuff. And Carmella tells Tyler that he's a strong-minded dude and doesn't compliment people often, but he's glad Bate has nothing to do with the NXT Championship scene because that's all him. We go into Alba Fire versus Ivy Nile. We get Ivy keeping her distance, collar and elbow. Fire shoves her down. Fireman's carry. Alba slips out. Big overhand chop, and Ivy throws her into the turnbuckles and lights her up with punches. Cover for one. Whip blocked. Alba shoves her hard into the ropes and puts boots to her, drawing her up. Gourd buster connects. Penalty kick. Then we get Ivy shoving her into the corner. Right hands cut off with a knee. Whip across. Keeps Nile in the game. Corner kick. Scoop, and Alba floats out. KLR bomb. Reverse into a near fall. We get a compassionate release. Ela Dawn with the distraction. Alba breaks by ramming Ivy into the ropes and Paxley. Super kick connects, and we get Alba Fire winning by pinfall with the KLR bomb. I enjoyed this for what it was. I think it's moving forward the storyline. And I did also like the backstage stuff with Tyler Bate and Trick and Mello, which will set something up later on. I kind of like how Mello is with signs of respect. Like he game recognizes game. I think that's what they're going with him. And I kind of enjoy that he's not like a punk, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on this, the backstage and then into this, Ivy and Alba match?
Yeah, they're not going full face with him, but they're making him kind of respect the guys that have been there longer than him, the guys that have been on top, in other parts of the company. Obviously Bate's been two-time UK champion, so he's a big deal. He was a big deal over there, and he's also coming over here, and he'll be a big deal immediately. So it's good to see that he's kind of, you know, like you just said, game recognizing game. And yeah, the Alba Ivy match was good. It was only like 3 minutes, so it was really quick, but they did a lot in that 3 minutes, and they were it's really back and forth, considering that it was that short. It's usually that short. It's usually pretty one-sided, but it was really back and forth for what little time they were given. So I thought they did pretty good with that short time for sure.
Yeah, and moving forward the story that's going on with the women. So that's kind of what the purpose was, I think, of it. So we get a Braun Breaker hype reel, sends us to break. Then we come back. We get Fallon Henley arriving at Kiana James's office to chat. She says that she knows she ruined Valentine's and she was wrong about Kiana and all of this, but all she could have just told her was that Zach was her brother. Kiana wanted her just to trust her, and Fallon says she wants to trust her and be able to defend her titles and apologize. Then we get Kiana accusing her of being jealous, but she says she'll believe her as long as she believes she has Brooks' best intention at heart, and they shake on it. And we get Wesley interviewed backstage. He gives Von Wagner credit for bringing it. He says he can't look to the horizon too much because he'll forget what's ahead of him. He knows everybody loves the open challenge, so next week he's going to do it again. Asks why. He continues to put himself at a disadvantage. He says that's just who he is. Then we get into our main event for the night. We got Braun Breaker defending against Jinder Mahal. We got Mahal knocking down Breaker out of the gates and crows about having been WWE champion. Waistlock, standing switch, back elbow, off the rope, shoulder block, sends the champion reeling. Whip across, leapfrog, shoulder block. Braun catches him in a snap scoop power slam, but into share, pull their man out of the ring. Then we get Braun off the ropes, big man Tope Con Hero back inside, off the ropes, stereo lariats, and both men are down and out into share on the apron, but the Creed brothers run down and neutralize them, and they brawl as they go to break. Back from commercial, struggling in the middle of the ring, Braun floats over and hits an overhead belly to belly suplex on Mahal for two. Jinder hooks him overhead, but Braun suplexes him for some breathing room. Trading punches, Braun with a series of rolling German suplexes, whips across, huge spinning spine buster. Then we get a picture-perfect knees, get Mahal and a near fall. Braun gets an avalanche Frankensteiner, crash landing, and Jinder kicks out. We get the Coloss roll through, Breaker catches him, and Braun wins by pinfall with the spear, retaining the NXT Championship. And then we get Grayson Waller taking over the Titantron from the production truck and says, hey, heartbreak man Shawn Michaels might have banned him from the show, but he took out a page out of the DX playbook, and he's Mr. Stand Deliver, and he promises a very special edition of the Grayson Waller Effect in 2 weeks with HBM as his guest, and that closes the show. So I enjoyed this main event. You know, Jinder, I always thought was a pretty decent worker, and Braun, you know, showed his explosiveness here. And it, you know, Jinder went down to do what he had to do. He put over the champion to move some stuff forward, and then your guy, Grayson Waller, closes the show. He's one of those guys that doesn't need to be in a title picture to be relevant, and he really shows it every time he's on screen. So I kind of enjoyed it, and looking forward to what's to come with him and Sean. So what are your thoughts on the main event and then the close of the show with Grayson?
Yeah, I was worried after Grayson lost to Braun what they would kind of do with him, because I didn't really know what his angle was going forward. But this is a great way to go. Him going after the authority figure is definitely, I mean, and he kills it, obviously. I mean, I feel like he's his, I mean, there's three people that are like huge stars in this this NXT brand, and it's, you know, Breaker, him, and Carmelo Hayes. So there's no doubt why those three guys are kind of at the top of the card going into Stand and Deliver, as we'll get into. The main event, it wasn't Braun's like best title match, but Jinder's just not, like you said, he's a decent worker, but he's not like an all time great or anything like that. He's not going to get this great, awesome match out of Braun Breaker, with his, you know, overall inexperience. He's only really been in the company for 2 years at this point. So, but it was good. It wasn't anything to write home about, I won't say. But it was a solid title match. It was a solid TV match. You know, when you only get, you know, 10 minutes with commercials, there's not a ton that you can do. This isn't, I mean, if this got pay-per-view time or PLE time, whatever you want to call it, it might have been a little bit better. But, I mean, in the grand scheme of his title matches, it's probably in the lower half, but it was still a good match. And I thought it was a good way to close this episode.
Okay. And then any other thoughts on Grayson in the control room?
I thought it was a great way for him to end the show and kind of call out Sean and set up this Grayson Waller Effect episode that he will have at Roadblock.
All right. Very good. All right. So we move on to the NXT show from February 28th. And the show opens hot with a bushel of NXT superstars fighting backstage for an opportunity to answer Wesley's open challenge for the NXT North American Championship. Dabba Kato breaks ahead of the pack into the entryway, only for Apollo Crews to cut him off and brawl until a bearded Nathan Frazier leapfrogs them both to answer the call. And we get Nathan Frazier versus Wes Lee for the North American Championship. Feeling out Frazier with a headlock takeover, wrenching it in off the ropes, trading arm drags, double drop kicks with double kip-ups. Nathan with a schoolboy for two. Lee blasts him with a knee, falling with a snapmare into a reverse chinlock, shot off shoulder block, cover for two. Into the ropes, Nathan breaks dirty, going right back into a headlock off the ropes. Wes hangs up in the ropes, rollover, back body drop to the apron, shoulder thrust, and Frazier back body drops him all the way to the floor, following with a moonsault. And we get nobody home there. Corkscrew top, tope con hero from Lee, also nobody home. He lands on his feet, pops right back up into a gamangiri for Frazier. I apologize if I'm butchering some of these. I know these words, but I don't see them written usually. So Frazier, as we go to break, back from commercial, Frazier sidesteps a charge and lays Lee out with a crescent kick. Nobody home on the moonsault. Roll through off the ropes. Both men go for cross bodies, end up down and out. Nathan to his feet, pressing the attack in the corner, jockeying for position up top. West shoves him away, but Frazier pops back up. Superplex roll through into a final clutch for a close pin. Out on the floor, Frazier goes for a slingshot to the table, but Lee moves out of the way and dives on him right after. Back in, slingshot, back handspring, and Wesley wins by pinfall with the cardiac kick to retain North American Championship. So this was a hot match. I kind of dig the way they're portraying the North American title right now with Wesley, where everybody is fighting for it. And they're gonna do this again in a future episode, but I kind of love how it's a scrum, and it's not an obvious person until that person gets in the ring, and they kind of do a little bit of a misdirection on you because you think it's gonna be one person, and all of a sudden somebody may come in at the end. So I'm really kind of enjoying it, and this was a really fun match. I thought good hot start to the show. What'd you think?
No, yeah, definitely a hot start to the show. I got kind of worried when Davocado came out. I was like, oh, they're gonna throw him in there with Wes. Like, I mean, obviously, I feel like it would end with a smize at some point with Apollo Crews. But Apollo Crews, of course, cuts him off. Frazier was a great choice. This was fast-paced, you know, super energetic, just all over the place. It was a little more technically based than I would have guessed with these two guys as well. They did a lot of submissions and a lot of, you know, like arm locks and headlocks as well. So I feel like they mixed a good variance of styles into this match. You could think looking at the two guys, it would be a lot of mostly high flying or even all high flying, which it was a lot of it, but it wasn't that way all the way through the match. So but yeah, just another really good opener to start an NXT episode. So again, we get that thing that always seems to happen on these episodes. So they started out with another hot one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. So we get a J.D. McDonough video package about what it's like to have a retinal tear and how he's going to test Ilya Dragunov's threshold for pain. We got Briggs and Jensen are chatting in the locker room. Briggs senses that something's wrong and thinks Kiana broke up with him. But Brooks says things just aren't the same since Valentine's. Josh says because they're stupid boys and tells him that Jensen 6 months ago would be proud of you if you could see him now. And they go to break. Back from commercial, we get a Tyler Bate hype reel. We get a Hank Walker interview backstage that he's trying to prove himself to everyone that he belongs here. Axiom rolls up to berate him for kicking him in the face. Axiom says they have a problem, and a brawl breaks out after he suggests that Hank couldn't have beaten Wes anyway. Then we go to the ring. We get Briggs and Jensen versus Indus Shear. Jensen immediately finds himself overwhelmed by both men, slips out of a slam attempt from Sanga, shot off Briggs with a blind tag and a throat thrust. Brooks back in, caught off balance, shoulder block, and an elbow drop, and Mahan puts boots to him. We get hanging up in the ropes, blasting him with a boot, scoop, and a slam. Sanga drops an elbow, nobody home, falling into a tag. Briggs, forearms for both men, fired up, putting Sanga in the ropes. Double team, but Brooks is off timing, and Josh gives him a piece of his mind. Sanga with a choke slam, tag to Veer, calling for it, and Dashir win by pinfall with a shote from Veer Mahan on Brooks Jensen. Post-match, Jinder Mahal gets on the mic to cut a promo on the Creed brothers for denying the NXT Universe an Indian champion last week, says they haven't been able to overcome him, and challenges him to a trios match next week. So I thought this match was okay. I do like Indus Shear. I think Josh Briggs is a great hot tag also. I think he's a house of fire. And I'm digging on what we're getting from JD and Dragunov right now, because those two guys are going to be – they're going to beat the crap out of each other, and I am so here for it. Hank Walker, you know, whatever, he's here. He's like – he's kind of like the poor man's big body Javi right now to me at some point. Like, when I see him on screen, I'm like, this is dumb. Like, I'm not in on this. Let me look at my phone for a minute, maybe while this is going on. But what are your thoughts on some of the storyline stuff plus the tag match?
Dang, when you're you're calling somebody great value Big Body Javi. That's pretty bad.
That's pretty bad.
That is pretty bad. But yeah, I liked all the stuff with JD and Dragunov, all the pain and inflicting pain on the other, doing it to damage every part of the other one's body and stuff like that. I like that whole thing that they're going for. Yeah, Hank is whatever at this point. It seemed like they were maybe going to try to do something with him and Gulak, but obviously he was just a pawn to get to Gulak and Dempsey being a team. I thought Axiom showing fire up against Hank was kind of a weird way to go. I mean, Obviously they had the interaction where they were both trying to get to the ring for the open challenge and he accidentally kicked him. So there is some story there, I guess, so that works. And the tag match was pretty much all story. It was just, you know, kind of showing that Brooks's head wasn't in it. He's kind of worried where he is with Kiana, so his head wasn't in it. He was kind of a step slow on everything. He's just in a different place mentally. I thought that clothesline, I think they call it the $1 million arm that Veer hit to win the match, I thought that clothesline was awesome. He nailed him with it. I thought that was really great. And yeah, the match that they're gonna have the next week, I was super excited to see that one with the Creeds and whoever their partner is gonna be, especially when they find their partner, it got even more exciting. So, but yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, I was all pretty excited too. So then we get Gigi walking backstage, sending us to break. Back from commercial, we get footage of the aftermath of Wendy Chu getting attacked in the parking lot just now. Then we get Gigi making her entrance.
Parking lot.
What? Avoid the NXT parking lot at all costs. We get Gigi making her entrance, gets on the mic, demands that the music get cut, and that's the last time you hear that awful song. She recaps basically what happened 3 weeks ago with JC and goes through their history, basically telling her that JC knows the last person Gigi beat her down like that was her own mother. Kind of gives how she talks about how she ran away from home and it's been her and her brother taking care of her. Kind of really, you know, gets kind of emotional here. And the crowd really gets behind her, kind of building up that baby face also to her. I don't know how, if it's legit or storyline, but I do follow Gigi on Instagram and she does a lot of stuff with her brother. So I'm thinking there's at least a kernel of truth there. And then, you know, she tells JC to bring everything that she has at Roadblock because it won't be enough. And she'll hammer the final nail in the coffin of Toxic Attraction. Then we get Chase Yu chatting and Duke Hudson stops mid-story to go check on Thea Hall. Thea Hale, I always pronounce that wrong. He asks her how she's doing, apologizes for his behavior last week, saying it was rude and immature. And he thinks that she's very strong and can stand on her own. She says she's sure Andre Trace will accept his apology about the university, but he says that he stands by what he said. Chase then takes the podium, gets interrupted by a projector video by the Schism running down Chase Yu and promising to leave the university in flames. Andre gets fired up about it, tells Schism he's going to show his students the principles he stands for when he shows Joe Gacy and Andre Chase University size ass whipping. So what'd you think of this promo from your beloved Gigi and then into the Chase Yu stuff?
I believe Chase said he's going to kick those fucking weirdos' asses. That's what he had no, but the Gigi promo was great. I feel like there was real emotion there. There has to be at least, like you said, a kernel of truth to what she was saying, if not the complete truth. But yeah, she really got inspired and real impassioned to what she was saying. So I think she knocked it out of the park. I don't know how strong of a promo she's been in the past, but yeah, this one was definitely one that one to remember without a doubt. And yeah, just the continuance of the Schism Chase Yu rivalry and just the problems that they're having with each other is shown here. And even Duke apologizes to Thea, but he also continues to say that what he said to Chase last week was what he completely he meant it, and that's what, you know, that's how he feels. So. Continuing to kind of show that little rift in between them two. So,
all right. So we get Miko Satomura making her entrance as we go to break. Then we get back from commercial. We got Dijak cutting a promo responding to Tony D's challenge. Says Tony cost him the North American Championship not once but twice. So now he's public enemy number one. And next week at Roadblock, he's going to lock him down for good. We go into a Miko Satomura versus Zoe Stark match. We get Roxanne out on commentary. We get Stark with a headlock takeover. Satomura reverses with a head scissors, headlock of her own. Drop toe hold, lateral press. Zoe breaks away. Test of strength, struggling. Miko bridges her back, but Stark forces her way back upright. Arm wringer, Satomura with another headlock. Zoe gets her in the corner, but Miko takes her to the floor and blasts her. And we go to break. Back for commercial. We get cravat knees from Stark into the corner. Back body drop to the apron, but she clobbers Satomura with a roundhouse kick. Follows it up with a springboard, only get cut off midair with a kick to the injured knee. Miko off the top rope with a frog splash, and we get her chest kicks follow. Stark gets her cut off against the rope, slingshot, only a near fall. Up top, Satomura cuts her off, Pele kick, back suplex, slam. Zoe off the top, 450 splash, nobody home. Sidekick from Satomura sets up the Death Valley driver. Miko fired up. We get the Scorpio Rising with Miko Satomura getting the win by a pinfall. With post-match, we get Roxanne gets up from commentary to have a face-to-face with her challenger for next week. I really like this match. Again, Satomura is another one that I wish I had seen more of before she makes her, you know, not sporadic, but she hasn't made a lot of appearances here in NXT, and I am kind of enjoying her. And Zoe, you know, nobody could argue that Zoe's not a good worker. It's just, you know, her character. And, you know, being heel gives her a little bit more of a character, but she's definitely somebody that will put on a decent match. And I thought this was a decent little match for TV. As far as the Tony D Dijak, it's like another story that I'm like kind of like looking forward to concluding, because these guys both need to move on to other things. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you on that for sure. The match was very hard-hitting. Very physical, very technical, a lot of holds, a lot of just wrenching on limbs and stuff like that. So that is definitely a type of match that some people are a huge fan of. I like it when it's good and hard-hitting like this one was. When it's a lot of submissions and not too much physical strikes, I'm not as much into it. But I think this one did a good job of mixing some like pretty hard strikes and some good submissions. So I was a fan of this one. And Satomura, that this is just she kicks ass. That's what she does. And like you said, with Stark, I think we've said in the past, not going to blow you away with much she does in the ring, but she's always going to have a good match. It's not ever going to be particularly bad, or it's probably not going to be her fault if it is bad. So
yes,
she's a very good worker, but she just might not be the most like knock your socks off superstar out there.
Yeah. Yeah. She's serviceable, like journeyman. Mm-hmm. So to speak, exactly. I guess is the best way to say. So we get a recap of Grayson Waller's takeover of the production truck from the week before. Tiffany Stratton then rolls up on Mackenzie Mitchell to give an update on Wendy Chu, who's going to be out indefinitely, and you should just stay away from the NXT parking lot. Katana Chance and King Carter leave the trans room and confirm that she's out and accuse Tiffany of attacking Wendy. Stratton accuses them right back and has a Tiffany epiphany that she should be a detective, and Katana challenges her to a match that night. So Ruka makes her entrance. We get to a break. We get the Creed Brothers walking backstage when we come back, discussing a potential unnamed tag partner when they roll up on Damon Kemp. They tell him he's still a bad person, but he's calculated and sly, and that's exactly what it's going to take for them to beat him this year. Kemp admits that they did rock some six-mans, but when Bruce admits that they might not be getting the boys back together, he says, hell no. Braun Breaker rolls up to say he's in as their partner for next week, and Julius blows up on him for not showing up a minute earlier and saving him the humiliation. Bruce and Braun laugh at him, and they all bark like dogs. So we get to a Electra Lopez versus Saul Ruka match. Saul with a headlock into the takeover. Lopez whip into the corner, up and over. Electra cuts her off with an elbow to the throat, off the ropes. Hip toss denied. Saul with an X factor, drawing her back up. Whip reverse, up and over. Tossed off the apron, slingshot up the top, and Lopez knocks her to the floor. Back inside, knees to the back. Elbow drop not enough to keep Ruka down. Training strikes Electra with a standing neck crank, punctuating with a knee drop to the neck right before going back to the crank. Ruka posts her to her feet, blocks right hands, eats a kick, back elbow cuts Lopez off as she smashes her face into the top rope. Jabs, whip reverse through a lariat off the ropes with a shoulder block, drop kick connects, straight suplex, handspring splash, nobody home, cover for two. Saul gets her into the corner and hits the Saul snatcher, and Saul Ruka wins by pinfall. Post-match, Valentina Ferraz confronts Electra Lopez and blasts her with her own brass knuckles. Didn't think that was what we were going to get, but So you get a little more excited about who the Creed brothers partner is. We get, you know, is Wendy legit injury or is she out or are they doing another repackage with her? And you know, this Saul Ruka Electra match was okay. The Soul Snatcher was not one of her best hitting, and I love in the replay how they frame it, where they try to minimize I'm not going to say botch, but you know it wasn't crisp. Let me put it that way.
The non crispiness.
The non crispy. The limp. What's the opposite of crispy? I'm not sure. Or crisp. Well, I will have to look that up. If any listeners, you know, want to write in and tell us what the opposite of crisp it would be, we'd be greatly appreciated. At least I would be. So what do you think on this thing with with Tiffany, who's been killing it personality wise and in ring since her return? And we get this match, and we get the Creed brothers fighting their tag partner. So what are your thoughts on these events?
Yeah, I definitely would like to see Tiffany in a detective outfit of some sort. So,
oh, hell yeah. That would be nice. Detective Pikachu, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Hey. I do think Wendy's injury is real. I it's obviously not what happened at the parking lot, but I think she is dealing with something. So I think that is a legit part of her being out. I do like that the Creeds are teaming with Braun. I feel like it props the Creeds up a little bit more, putting them in there with the main eventer. I do think the segment was absolutely absurd with them all barking at the end. I thought it was a little ridiculous, but you need a little comedy thrown in there. Faraz came out with Lopez, and I was starting to think, did I miss something where they like joined each other that I don't remember? Obviously after the match, we learned that they're not really together, I guess. But not a bad match. Obviously just to get Saul over. I'm kind of surprised Elektra didn't get the win here. I feel like they've been trying to prop her up lately. But I think it's kind of setting Saul up for a match on one of our next episodes a little bit as well. So, but yeah, obviously the match was more leading to the aftermath with Faraz kind of knocking her out with the brass knuckles. So obviously they aren't together, even if they may eventually be, they aren't now. So, but yeah, solid match, but nothing to write home about.
All right, cool. So then we get back at the pub. Gallus are paying Bill billiards again. Mark Coffey then rambles about Liberty taking ball bags, and eventually it turns out he's real mad about Pretty Deadly and trying to get Wolfgang fired up about it. Eventually, some poor dude checks Wolfie with his elbow, and Wolfgang glasses him and beats him down. Pretty Deadly are then interviewed backstage. They said that they spank Gallus good and proper, and then are asked to respond to Drew McIntyre's tweet about the receipt that's coming to them. They say Scotland is terrible, gray, and dreary, and full of horrible people reveling in how rough and rugged they are. So next week, they'll meet Gallus face-to-face for a refreshing chinwag about their upcoming match, and we go to break. We come back, and we get Katana Chance versus Tiffany Stratton. Chance with some pyrotechnics early, big head scissors out of the corner, inside curdle, only two. Side headlock, back suplex lands on her feet, cartwheel evasion, leapfrogs, Tijera's blocked. Stratton, Gallon throws her into the ropes. Katana with an upkick, sliding trip, flying forearm off the ropes for Tijera's. Then we get a knee in the ropes, double stomp, hung in the ropes, corkscrew splash for two. Chance headed up as Alba Fire and Isla Dawn come down to ringside. Stratton catches her with a crossbody, Finley roll, double jump. Tiffany Stratton wins by pinfall with a double jump moonsault. Post-match, Tiffany gets on the mic and calls Roxanne Perez and Miko Satomura out, saying she doesn't care who wins next week because the NXT Women's Championship belongs to her. I tell you, I loved Tiffany Stratton, her setup, you know, with the roll into the double jump moonsault. I think she's hit it perfect each time she's done it since we've been back. You know, the whole Gallus Pretty Deadly thing, it's fun. It's passing the time here. I'm okay with it. So what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, that they have proven history with each other, that they can have really good matches and that they can have a pretty good rivalry. They did it in UK, which not a ton of people saw, obviously, but I did. And I really enjoyed all of their matches that they had with each other. They have obvious chemistry with each other, as we'll see in a match, the match that they have on an episode coming up. But yeah, Stratton continues to knock it out of the park. Her and Katana are a good matchup. Tiffany's much bigger than she is, height wise, obviously. So she could play the kind of domineering heel in this one. But yeah, she continues to nail that the best moonsault ever that Christopher Daniels used to call it. But she does it a little bit better than even he did. So, just really awesome to see her kind of ascend. And I'm really, really interested to see where she goes going forward on this. She's going to be a big star for them, I think.
Oh, yeah. I definitely love her. I mean, look, Katana Chance, I don't think there's anybody that's smaller than her on any of the rosters. I mean, height-wise, maybe close, but, but size-wise, yeah, she's definitely the tiniest woman on the entire WWE, so... but I think she's okay. I mean, again, her and Kayden, I don't have high hopes for on the main roster. Mm-hmm. I just feel like I don't know if they're going to translate, and they maybe just, I don't want to see them get hit road, so to speak, right now. Because hit road came up with such fanfare. They lost their leader. Now they're kind of like glorified jobbers. And I'm feeling that might be in their future, some people to have on the roster, kind of like what they've done with Umberto and Angel, I guess, so to speak. They're good workers, but they're really around to be on house shows and be on TV once in a while to take a loss for the most part. But
yeah, it'll depend on how seriously they take the women's tag titles in the future, because it's just not a main focus on TV. I think that's a place where they could ascend and be a big part of, but. They're definitely not going to be single stars on their own, I don't think. I think that ship has passed for both of those girls. I think if they're not a tag team, it's just they're going to just be that person that you're kind of talking about, the house show warriors, and maybe every now and then on TV.
Yeah, part of like multi-women's match or a battle royal, rumble, who knows.
Yep.
But, all right, so then we get Josh Briggs walking up to Brooks Jensen, says he and Fallon are all he has, and whatever's going on with him and Kiana, Fallon can't get in the way of their work. Briggs says that Henley already apologized, and that's the hard part, so all Brooks has to do is get his girl back, and that'll take time. Jensen admits he's overthinking, he just wishes he could have a do-over. Josh says that you don't get a lot of do-overs in life, but he'll be willing to talk to Kiana for him. Brooks is appreciative and tells him to do anything to make it up to him, and they hug it out. Axiom makes his entrance. As we go to break, we get Axiom versus Hank Walker. Axiom right on him with body scissors, sleeper hold, back into the corner to break, but Axiom jumps right back on him, shifting to a cross armbar. Hank deadlifts him up. Axiom slaps him across the face, scooping him up, and a block of sunset flip. Duck a lariat, waist lock, O'Connor roll denied, and Walker blasts him with a big boot. Duck a lariat, Axiom throws a dropkick. Gamangiri headed up to the top, diving crossbody, only for two. Hank with a stinger splash and a big lariat. Inside cradle cuts him off for two. Drop kick from Axiom setting up for the golden ratio kick. And Axiom wins by pinfall. Post-match, Axiom congratulates Hank on his fighting and offers him respect. So, the ongoing, Briggs, Jensen, Kiana, Henley saga is going on. And it's just like, all right, another one of those. I think with a lot of these storylines are getting long in the tooth, and we're kind of getting to, I think we're getting a little, overtired on some of these, and we kind of need them to come to their conclusions and move on, which I think is because, obviously with Stand and Deliver right around the corner, we're going to get that. But I think we just have to be patient, I guess. And then we get this Hank Walker Axiom match, which is fine. I thought it was okay. I mean, any thoughts on these?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was obviously just a way to showcase Axiom and what he can do in the ring against a bigger guy that he might face off with in the future. Obviously, Hank's not the top tier big guy to go up against, but yeah, this Brooks and Kiana love affair. Something that probably needs to wrap up pretty quickly. I think you're probably going to get the conclusion of that. Whenever Kiana and Fallon lose the tag titles, and I probably think that's going to be at Stand and Deliver with who they end up facing. I think that would be obviously the way to go. So, yeah, I don't think it has much longer to have much life to it, because I think it'll conclude with whatever happens at Stand and Deliver there. So for sure. So, yeah, this is one of the many storylines that needs to kind of wrap up.
Yep. All right. So we get a Twitter promo from Grayson Waller about Heartbreak Man Shawn Michaels accepting his invitation to sit down at the Grayson Waller Effect, asking whether or not we're going to get HPK or the Corporate Stooge, and all he wants is the proper respect. Then we get Carmelo Hayes making his entrance, which sends us to break. And then back from break, we get Carmelo versus Tyler Bate. Collar and elbow, Bate forced to back off, test of strength, arm drag, kip up, stalemate. We get a wrist lock, Tyler blocking attempts to reverse, but Hayes gets it reversed to a hammerlock. Carmelo runs him around the ring and slings him out of it, back inside, trading pins, a schoolboy from the Big Strong Boy, and almost does it. Underhooks blocked, code breaker deny, test of strength, ducking and dodging. Bate tries to fake Hayes out, big headbutt, whip across, back body drop to the floor. Tyler with the rope, tope, sorry, as we go to break. Back from commercial, Hayes has a top wrist lock and is working Bate's arm. Tyler gets away, diving uppercut. Trick Williams gets involved, but eats bop and bang. Overhead exploder on Hayes, standing shooting star press, but not enough. Pump, kick, dodge, Tyler with the fireman's carry, airplane spin, but Mello counters into a pin. Pump kick connects, but Bate gets the airplane spin in full effect now. Bop and bang, rebound lariat. So close, but none. Uppercut for the chop in the middle of the ring. Hayes with a wicked knee and a suplex into an ace crusher. Up top, Tyler cuts him off for an exploder superplex. Bate climbs back up top. Trick runs interference. Corkscrew senton. Atomico. Hayes with a kick off the top. Then we get Carmelo Hayes winning by pinfall with nothing but net. Post-match, Carmelo calls out Braun Breaker right down the barrel of the camera. So this match was great. I really enjoyed it, even with the bullshit trick interference. But I thought Tyler looked great. Melo always looked tremendous. Big win for Carmelo Hayes. And, yeah, I love the – I forgot which move it's called, but when Tyler goes off the ropes – like kind of like head first, and he bounces off and he hits that lariat. Oh, so good. But yeah, I thought this was a really great match. What'd you think?
Yeah, I can't remember what it's called, but I do love that move. I think it's very innovative and unique. I don't think I've seen many people do that.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I think Ambrose used to do the thing where he kind of leaned back and.
Yeah, I love that too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I feel like this is even cooler of a version than that one was. So, But, yeah, I thought this match was great. Just seeing the two come out, you knew it was going to be at least a certain amount of stars or whatever you want to say. But, yeah, for a TV match, this is probably about as good as you're going to get. These are two great superstars. Bate's super good in the ring. Melo's good overall with everything. I mean, Bates, my skills are okay, but they're not the greatest. But, yeah, these are just two guys that are going to be Melo for sure is going to be a huge star for them going forward, and Bate is going to be one of those guys that they can always rely on to have a really good match. So, yeah, this is probably about as good of a matchup as you could have on TV, all things considered, for sure.
Yeah, and I don't think it hurts Tyler in this loss. It makes Melo look even better coming out of it. So, yeah, it was a really solid TV main event. So then we go to the show from March 7th, which is Roadblock, and we get Tiffany Stratton giving us a rundown of the night's show before it gets kicked off with the first match of the night, which is our Dijak versus Tony D Jailhouse Street Fight. We get them both head outside early on, and Tony D finds a baton that he used on his opponent. They fought over to the jail cell before making their way back to the ring. Tony takes a choke slam onto a chair before Dijak hit with a slam on top of some more chairs. After a break, we get Dijak putting Tony through a table before trying to lock him inside the jail cell. Stax gets involved. Tony beats down Dijak with a chair before the Don gets a crowbar. Stax took the feast for your eyes before Tony beat him down into the cell with the crowbar to pick up the win. And we get Tony D defeating Dijak and bringing an end to this feud, thankfully. What do you think of this opening match?
I thought this was great. I thought this was hard-hitting. It had a little bit of everything. It had weapons. It had tables. It even had a crowbar there at the end. I thought Stax played his role really well in this. He saved him from losing the match. He dove into the door as Dijak was about to shut it and win. So I thought Dijak played his role well. I thought D'Angelo played his role well, and I really thought Stacks stood out in this one, kind of getting his ass kicked, but also sacrificing him for his boss or head of the family, the Don. So I really, really enjoyed this one. I thought this was another great opener.
Yeah.
They, I know I'm a broken record, but it's just how it is. I mean, it's every episode.
Yeah, it kind of harkens back to the 8 o'clock hour of Nitro a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, where they always start off, they always put the cruisers in there. We always got really good stuff match-wise. They really didn't start the promo and storyline stuff really until the 9 o'clock hour when they were going head-to-head against Raw. So, yeah. You know, that it kind of harkens back to, you know, I would always watch the 8 o'clock hour live. And then I would usually, I think I would tape one or tape the, I think I would always tape Raw at 9 because I think Nitro got replayed at midnight.
That's right.
So yeah, I would. Yeah, I know I'm aging myself talking about a VCR, so that's something.
Yeah, I mean, I was like 4 at the time, so I don't really know, but that's what I've heard, at least. So.
Yes. In my day, like Sean Kidd. Oh, sorry. A little Sean Kidd thing in there. There we go. All right, so we got a Roxanne Perez interview about her title defense later that night. We get Briggs backstage, walked up to Kiana to talk to her on behalf of Brooks Jensen. Josh explains how Brooks was afraid of making the wrong move, and Kiana agreed to set up another date with him. Gallus were out on the ring, called out Pretty Deadly before the latter appeared from the crowd. Pretty Deadly wants their tag titles back, and Joe Coffey asked them if come to the ring and take them before they approach the ring. Gallus let them know that the match wouldn't be tonight before a brawl breaks out, and Pretty Deadly ends up taking a beating. Then we get a Lyra Valkyria package, basically challenges the winner of the women's title match to a future match. Then we get a Dragunov package on JD McDonough. Dragon Lee is in the crowd, introduced. Then we get our six-man match, which is Bron Breakker and the Creeds versus Indus Shearer. The match started before the bell, with both teams brawling a bit inside and outside the ring. Veer and Bron start the match. Bron gets a big Lyra before tagging in the Creeds, who take down Sangha. Jinder came in, take a suplex before getting a near fall off a knee on Julius. Brutus comes in, cleared the apron before Mahan takes a bonsai drop. Brutus got the Brutus bomb and Olympic slam before tagging Braun in. Braun wiped out Sangha and tagged the Creeds, who hit the Brutus bomb doomsday device on Veer for the win. Result, Bron Breakker and the Creed brothers defeat Indus Shearer. So, I mean, again, more of the storyline stuff. You know, we get the whole, you know, Briggs Jensen, Kiana Fallon stuff. We get Gallus and Pretty Deadly moving forward a little bit. We get a good package for Lyra Valkyria moving forward, the Dragunov and JD thing. We get Dragon Lee, his first appearance on NXT television. And then we get a really good hard-hitting six-man with this Doomsday Brutus bomb, which looked like it was a ton of fun. So what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I'll just start from the top. Roxanne seems nervous going into a match with Miko. Miko's such a living legend, so it's good to kind of show that respect, that she's taking her seriously and knows how big of a test that it's going to be for. More Briggs and Jensen stuff. You know, Kiana's obviously trying to hide something. She takes the card from the flowers right as Briggs is about to take it. He obviously assumes that they're from Brooks. So that's interesting, and that'll play a part in our next episode. And then the Gallus thing, they had their prepa chin wag or whatever they called it. So it was just a little back and forth, kind of setting up a match for next week for the tag titles. And you know, Gallus gets a few shots in, but Pretty Deadly runs away pretty quick. Valkyria challenges the winner of the women's match tonight, and she also kind of PO'd at Stevie Turner for calling her out last week as well. Awesome to see Dragon Lee show up. He signed quite a few months ago, so I'm surprised they hadn't brought him in quite yet, but obviously I think they're trying to give him a big stage for his first match, because I think he'll be involved in a match that will be kind of set up on our next episode as well. And then the six man was super fun. The Creed, if the Creeds are involved, it's probably going to be at least pretty good. Braun being their six man partner probably bumped it up even a little more. And the Shearer is a, you know, they're all big, huge dudes. So it's fun to see them kind of throw people around and chuck people around. But this was just six hosses going at it. So that's always a fun time when a match like that kind of happens. And the Doomsday Brutus Ball was awesome. So great way to finish the match.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed that. Fun TV, bunch of just a hard-hitting, you know, guys just beating the crap out of each other. We get a toxic attraction package about their partner. Package about their partnership and breakup leading up to tonight's match. We get Grayson Waller out next, and Shawn Michaels is his guest on the Grayson Waller Effect. HBK asked why Waller hated him, and Grayson said that he wanted to be the number one guy in NXT, but Shawn was holding him back. Grayson then makes excuses about every loss before Shawn says that he was just looking for someone to blame for his own shortcomings. They talked about Shawn's role on the show before HBK warned Waller not to come after his brand. HBK said he would love to take Waller down and stand and deliver, but there was somebody who wanted it a lot more. HBK said that Waller would be facing Johnny Gargano, and who comes out and rushes the ring before, and they get into it a little bit, you know, a couple of hits. Johnny's about to hit his super kick, and Grayson rolls out of the ring. I really love this segment here. I thought Grayson and Shawn went back and forth. I mean, I did you know, leave out a few details here and there that I'm sure you'll cover. But yeah, I was really glad that Shawn's not getting ring, because part of me was thinking, you know, are they going to do this? Are they going to have Shawn get in the ring one more time? And I bet Shawn would to help his brand out, you know, and put Grayson over. But I think having a proxy just serves it better. And you know, the reasoning behind this, too, you know, it's kind of a picks up another story that had ended a while ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is your guy, right? As I've said a few times tonight, but this is what the thing that you're probably the most excited about coming up at Stand and Deliver. So why don't you take your thoughts on the on this segment?
Yeah, there's a sick part of me that kind of wanted to see Shawn get in the ring one more time. You know, make up for that crap match that he had in Saudi Arabia after he retired against Taker at the WrestleMania 26. But yeah, I mean, this is just a great segment. At no point did Waller feel smaller or less than Shawn. They played off of each other incredibly well. You know, Waller talks about how he obviously, like a lot of people of his generation, wanted to be Shawn, loved Shawn growing up, and really aspired to be him, and like that a younger him would have freaked out being there. Now he kind of says he's more of a Bret Hart guy, to kind of get that dig in. So, but yeah, he just Waller's saying he constantly feels like he's been pushed down. Even when he won the Iron Survivor, it wasn't more about him. It was more about Braun and how Braun was going to take him over, and how Shawn kind of favored Braun in ways that he didn't favor Waller. So yeah, just great segment. I thought he came across super well. This is just more proof that I think he's high on their list of guys that just are going to be a big deal for them for a long time. So really, really awesome segment.
All right, then we move on to Gigi Dolin versus JC Jane. A little surprised that we were getting it here and not Stand and Deliver, but you know, we get Gigi starting off strong, sends JC outside before JC tried to run into the crowd. Dolin drags her back to ringside. JC gets a rolling elbow before getting a steel chair, but it was Gigi who hit her with the chair off a counter. JC's in control after a break and hit a few kicks before getting a senton for a near fall. Gigi gets a roundhouse kick before taking a neck breaker. Gigi kicked out of a senton before getting the cobra twist slam for the win. And we get Gigi defeating JC. After the match, JC attacks Gigi from behind, wrapped a steel chair around her neck before the officials came out to stop it. So were you surprised that we got this match here and not Stand and Deliver? Or, you know, do you think it's part of a bigger thing? Were you surprised Gigi gets the win? Maybe she wins the battle, but not the war, so to speak. So what do you think of the match? Because there's a lot more to come from these two ladies, I have a feeling.
Yeah. I've... I kind of was expecting it to maybe be a stand and deliver match, but I think there's more to it. I think this was kind of part one. I think it kind of came across that Gigi kind of snuck out the win with her little crucifix bomb move that she finished the match with. So this obviously seems like kind of a part one to their story and an eventual other matches are going to happen. I believe they, we'll talk about it in the next episode, but I believe there was an, JC's playing off that she has an injury from this match. So, I think she probably won't be involved at Stand and Deliver in the match, but I think she might play a part, when they actually get to that, ladder match, that they will have, in the episode that we'll talk about later. but yeah, definitely part one of the story. And I realized that I just never talked about Gargano from the previous segment, so I'm going to talk about him now.
Okay.
I think that's a very good way to have a proxy for Sean. I think it makes a ton of sense. It makes a ton of story sense. Obviously, the last time we saw Gargano on NXT, he got attacked by Waller, so it's a perfect way to thread that story back in. So I thought that was really smart to use him as a proxy if they were going to use a proxy. So, but yeah.
Yeah. The only other proxy I think would be Ciampa, who's hurt if they didn't have Gargano. Right. I mean, who else could have been if Johnny was hurt or whatever? I mean,
it would have been forced whoever else it was. Johnny makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. It feels natural with him.
Exactly.
Basically. All right, so we get Briggs and Jensen talking to Fallon Henley. They find out that someone sent Kiana James flowers. It wasn't Jensen. Henley and Briggs were curious about who it could be from while Jensen went to take a phone call from James. Braun Breaker. I know. He's like, yo, what's up, girl? Like, it was pretty funny.
We can chill.
this is all-time favorite Brooks Jensen moment here was this, because he was hysterical here. Goofy, and then, you know, who among us have not done that? Been like with their friends or whatever, like, oh my god, oh my god. Yeah, oh no, it's cool, man. Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, whatever you want to do, yeah, I'm good. But no, you believe, it's hysterical and it hits home so much. It was really great writing, whoever came up with that. So we get Braun walking out to the ring, called out Carmelo Hayes before challenging him to a title match. Turns out that both of them are following each other's careers and hoping for a match. They set up a title match for NXT Stand and Deliver before the show moves on. Then we got Thea Hale learning how to meditate with Tyler Bate, but Duke Hudson wasn't convinced that it was of any use. We get into a match. We get Andre Chase versus Joe Gacy. Gacy gets an early near fall with a vertical brain buster before Chase broke out a big slam and took Joe down for the Chase U kicks. Chase gets an Uranagi for a near fall before Gacy hit one of his own. The two beat each other down in the middle of the ring before Chase was almost hit with a superplex but turned into a mineral powerbomb. Thea Hale went and got confronted the schism before high-fiving Chase. Chase was hyped, but Gacy used the distraction to hit a springboard clothesline for the win with Joe Gacy defeating him. So I thought this match was okay. I mean, I'm a little bit higher on Joe Gacy, I guess, than you are, and I thought it was really good for his showing. I mean, Andre is a good worker, and he puts it on, and a lot of this is storyline-driven. I kind of like, we get Braun and Carmelo, and it's a sign of respect. That's what these guys, that's what they're going with here, and I like the take on it, and like a gentleman's agreement, so to speak. I'm seeing how this is playing out, and again, more of the, you know, the Briggs, Jensen, Fallon, Kiana stuff. So what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, Jensen was hysterical in that segment for sure, and he's every guy that has ever had wanted to have a girlfriend for the first time in their life. Usually it happens a little younger for most people. It's poor Brooks is struggling at this point. At whatever age he is, probably 20-something. But yeah, I do like the kind of gentleman's agreement that you were kind of saying with Braun and Carmelo. Like, this is the match that has to happen. They're the only two that haven't faced each other in a big match. This is a way to do the, like, respect angle without, you know, without going fishing and going to the diner with each other and stuff like that. So that this is the way that you do that kind of segment where they're both kind of faces at this point, and you don't really want to, you know, have them attack and stuff, do stuff like that with each other. So this is the way you do that, not the way that they did the Apollo Crews rivalry and all that going forward. Thea learning to meditate with Tyler Bate was definitely an interesting segment for sure. And then the match, like you said, it was all right. Not too much to, not too much to get into on that one. I mean, it's pretty short. Obviously, Chase loses again, so it'll continue to kind of create that rift with him and Duke. And Thea actually does stand up for herself against Ava on the outside. She doesn't attack her or anything, but she kind of tells her that, I'm not scared of you anymore. So that was a good little spot. But obviously, it's just to kind of create that little bit more of a rift between Hudson and Chase.
Like Boo standing up to Randall in Monsters, Inc., right?
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Ela Dawn and Alva Fire in a package where they perform a moon ritual on the other tag teams they will be facing later on that night. Thea is happy about being able to face her fears of the schism, and Chase was happy for her, but Duke was very angry about the loss and called the stable a joke before storming off. Wes Lee interviewed about his potential challengers and announced another open challenge for the following week. Axiom says he's going to be the one to challenge him. Wes says as long as he gets to the ring, it'll be him. And we get to our main event for the night, which is Roxanne Perez defending against Miko Satomura for the NXT Women's title. Satomura gets the first takedown, locked in into a headlock before Perez sends her to the outside but missed the dive. Satomura caught her in a knee bar before Roxanne countered it with some huge but took some huge strikes from the challenger. Perez took some more shots before countering with a dragon screw, some elbows in the corner. Roxanne sent Miko outside but was caught up on the top rope. Perez tried for a rope-assisted powerbomb but missed. Miko got a dive from the top, but Perez got her knees up. Miko goes for kicks and attempted an axe kick, but Roxanne countered, rolled up Miko for the retainer title. After the match, Satomura handed Roxanne the title as a show of respect, and as she was about to help the champ up, Roxanne collapsed in the ring. Officials and medics came out and wheeled her away on a stretcher as NXT went off the air. This, I enjoyed this match. I like the actually go back to the Alba Isla thing. I kind of dig what these chicks are doing leading up to the following week with their match. And then, we get the Chase U stuff moving forward. Wesley, I'm having fun with this one. You know, I think it's something different. It's refreshing. It's you don't know each week on who's going to face him. And it kind of gives all the guys a moment on TV, at least even if they're just like in a kind of a ridiculous brawl. And as far as our main event, I thought the match was actually pretty decent. Roxanne, it does look real at the end. She does a good job. I mean, the whole thing when Booker coming into the ring, being that she trained at his school. I wonder though, was this a planned storyline? Is she maybe hurt, or I don't exactly know where they're going with this. I don't know if maybe that training session kind of wore her out, and this was like her kind of collapsing from exhaustion over preparing for this match. I kind of don't know, but what do you think about this stuff here?
I definitely think they were trying to play it off more as like she took a lot of stiff shots to the head. She got dumped on her head quite a few times with some suplexes and stuff like that. So, the exhaustion may have played into that a little bit, but I think they were going for more of a trauma type injury from some hard shots. But yeah, very hard hitting, very, very good match. Probably the best or second best match of the night, depending on how much you like that opener. But yeah, definitely a strong match. This is one, if it could have gotten a little more time and been on a PLE possibly, I think it could have been a really, really great match. I think with it being on TV and having, the picture-in-picture kind of commercial breaks and stuff like that, it loses a little bit there. But yeah, just a very solid match between two really, really talented wrestlers, a legend in Miko, and then a rising star that's obviously going to be very good for a long time, and Roxanne. I don't know how reality we want to get into this, but I don't think her injury is anything with her head or anything kind of concussion wise or anything like that. I think I read it's not even an injury. I think it's like a personal matter that's going to kind of keep her out after this, but this is kind of a way of writing her off, and however long it takes her to figure out whatever the other thing is, They can kind of bring her back whenever she figures whatever it is out. So I have read that it's not an injury. It's just kind of like a personal issue that she has with something. I don't know what it is. That it didn't really go into detail, but yeah, great match. Obviously it's sad to kind of see, Roxanne get hurt and kind of get written off a little bit, but yeah, really solid way to end Roadblock for sure.
All right, very good. Okay, so we move on to our final show we're going to cover on this episode of our podcast from March 14th. The show opens with a recap of the previous week's show, with a heavy focus on Roxanne Perez collapsing after the main event and getting driven away by an ambulance. Johnny Gargano makes his entrance, gets on his mic. Pause for like 1 second. I really wish they gave him back his old NXT theme, you know, with the female voice, because
I don't like his new.
I don't like the new one. Why did they have to change it? I don't know. Maybe could have been a rights thing, you know, with the singer. Who knows? I don't know. They were forced to do a re-record or a remix. I don't know. But yeah, it's just not the same. I'm sorry. Anyway, he asks where he left off, and a welcome home chant breaks out. Says it's WrestleMania's story. And that there's a lot of talk about finishing stories, and he's back in NXT to finish his story. 15 months ago, his story ended on a cliffhanger, and when he came back to Raw, it felt like a piece of him was missing. The last time you saw him on NXT, he was face down on the announce desk with Grayson Waller standing tall over him, and he hates to say it, but kind of respects it. The last guy who took him out was Tommaso Ciampa, who went on to be one of the greatest NXT champions of all time. And what has Waller done since taking Johnny out? He's had two chances and failed. Then what did he do? He whined and complained and cried and blamed everyone but himself and disrespected NXT. And no matter where Johnny goes, NXT will always be his home, and you don't disrespect a man's home. Vic Joseph gets up from commentary with his phone and shows Gargano that Grayson is streaming live from Johnny's house, and Johnny runs off to intercept him. Then we see, we'll pause there to talk about this Johnny promo, because I thought it was really great. It's so nice to see Johnny back in NXT, and he did have unfinished business. I mean, Johnny did the job going out. I mean, we all know, Johnny was leaving at the time, and he extended, I believe, right? He extended just to finish out the storyline, because that's the kind of guy he is. Started a family and was, luckily brought back under Triple H, and we get Johnny Wrestling back, although he's kind of been, I guess, treading water, so to speak, a little bit with what's going on in the main roster. I think, I just be a little patient with him there's going to probably be other movement and changes around on the card. So, Johnny may be in a better position on the card up there, but here, he's NXT. If you go back through the entire history of it, he's the guy you put on the poster, right? If you think of NXT, who else do you think of? You think of Johnny Gargano. There's a lot of people that you will think of. You could put Seth, Adam Cole, Big E, Charlotte, Sasha, Bailey, but Johnny's Mr. NXT. So what do you think of Johnny's promo here?
Yeah, like the only person that maybe could possibly be close to him in the NXT importance ranking would be the Horsewomen, and maybe specifically Bailey. Yeah, she was like the first real big face that had the great match at the Brooklyn Takeover and everything like that. So, her and maybe Asuka, but I think the Horsewomen and Gargano are a little bit more known as NXT superstars, and that's where they made their big coming out party, something like that. Yeah, Gargano's hadn't been used super duper well on the main roster, but I think they're still kind of trying to figure some stuff out with the mid card and things like that. And I think he'll be used a little bit better once Mania is done. I think it's a great idea to bring him in there and have a big match on this card, as opposed to him just being in a battle royal on Mania. I think it's a really good idea to use him in this situation to either put over Waller or get his revenge and have a great match with Waller, even if he does win. But yeah, he's synonymous with NXT for sure. And this is a great promo. And it leads to a pretty good segment later.
Yeah. So we get Wes Lee getting out of his car, and Axiom rolls up saying he's not leaving his side until the open challenge goes off. Wes asks, what's he going to do? And Axiom says, whatever Lee wants to do. And the champion wants to grab him by teeth, so off they go. Pretty Deadly makes their entrance as we go to break. Back from commercial, we get footage of Johnny Gargano getting into his car and driving home to intercept Grayson Waller. We get into a match, which is Gallus, Mark Coffey, and Wolfgang versus Pretty Deadly on Prince and Kit Wilson for the tag team titles. Coffey and Prince start collar and elbow until things devolve into strikes. Headlock from Mark, block the shoot-off. Second try works, but he lays Elton out with a shoulder block. Overhead arm drag, whip reverse, Coffey with an elbow in the corner, and Prince bails to the floor. Wolfgang gives chase, Elton back inside, Wilson tags in, sunset flip, small package, same result. Kit putting boots to Wolfgang in the corner, back body drop to the apron, shoulder thrust, slingshot blocked. Wolfgang throws him aside and tags Coffey back in. Double rolling leg snap on Wilson, huge catapult back body drop on Prince, and the tag champs dump their challengers to the floor and send us to break. Back from commercial, Coffey with an O'Connor roll on Wilson. Cheap shot from Prince sets up a back suplex, and he tags in, puts the boots to Mark. Leg drop across the throat, gets two. Working the champion over, reverse chin lock applied, cover for two. Eventually, Coffey gets away and tags Wolfgang in. Wolfgang in with the hot punches, big leg lariat, corner crossbody. Big boot takes Wilson out on the apron. Diving double axe handle to Prince, by some follows off the ropes, freight train crossbody. Big near fall off a belt shot, tag to Kit off the ropes. Wolfgang low bridges Elton to the floor. Mark off the ropes, big uppercut, tag to Wolfgang, fireman's carry. Gallus wins by pinfall with the Busaka knee, fireman's carry, flapjack combination on Kit Wilson to retain the NXT Tag Team Championship. This was a good match. I really did enjoy it. I think these guys have great chemistry. I'm sitting here, I'm trying to compare them to an older teams. And you know, on the surface, you know, your first inkling would be to compare Pretty Deadly to the Rockers. But I see them more like the Rougeau brothers. And I'm trying to think of, like, who the contemporaries would be of them and maybe Demolition of Gallus. I don't know how far off I am on these comparisons. But what did you think of this tag match?
Yeah, I would maybe say the Bulldogs, but I don't think either of them are as fast as Dynamite was. So
yeah, nobody.
Maybe if they were two British Bulldogs, so yeah. or two Davey Boy Smiths. I mean, obviously. But you know, this was really great. I like this combination of teams. They had some really good stuff in UK, as we talked about earlier. But yeah, this was probably a little shorter than some of those matches were, so it may not have gotten to the point that some of those matches did, but it was still good for the time that they were given. I thought it was really strong. I'm huge fans of Pretty Deadly as a team. I think a lot of what they've done lately, we've been a big fans of. And Gallus, I'm kind of in and out on them. They have some good stuff that I really like, but I think they've been pretty impressive in what they've had so far. So I do like them better than I like the singles star that is usually with Gallus. So he's the kind of the boring part of the group. So, but I like the team of Mark and Wolfgang for sure.
It kind of seems like they're kind of making Pretty Deadly like almost like a New Day type, where they're in matches, but they do a lot of like other stuff, like skit stuff, and they're great personalities. And as far as Gallus goes, I mean, I don't know if they've ever fought, but I can't wait to see them and the Viking Raiders beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah, that would be an awesome matchup.
I think that's going to be a lot of fun if it happens, and I hope and I think it will at some point. It might not be for a while, but all right. So then we get Josh Briggs wearing a ghillie suit. I mean, was that what that's called? The camouflage thing he's wearing? I'm trying in this write up that I'm reading from. I don't know what this is, but.
Something it's like I've a heard. Camouflage outfit is what I would just call it.
Yeah, I'm just calling it camo. So for no good reason, and with Fallon Henley breaking into Kiana James' office, she's eager to pick the lock with a bobby pin, but he points out the door is open and they go in. She finds a contract on the desk and finds it's a qualifying match for the NXT Women's Championship match to stand and deliver. We find Kiana's planner and feels that she has a whole master plan about getting to the tag titles, and there's somebody named Sebastian she has dinner and drinks with. Briggs wants to think it's a coworker, and then they turn the page and find a card from the flowers, which is Sebastian thanking Kiana for a wonderful date and night together. We get a solemn voiceover from Heartbreak Man Shawn Michaels reading his tweets about setting up qualifying matches for a potential replacement NXT Women's Championship. Sol Ruka makes her entrance, and we go to break. Back from commercial, we get Dr. Warren Becker giving us updates on Roxanne Perez's condition, saying essentially that all of her tests have come back good, but they're not sure what made her collapse, and they need to do further testing before giving her a clear date for an in-ring return to action. And we get Sol Ruca versus Zoe Stark for the in an NXT Women's Championship qualifying match. Ruca shoving Stark into feeling out, whip across, back body drop. Zoe bails to the floor for a breather. Back inside, back and forth. Sol nails her with a lariat, and Stark goes to the floor, catching Ruca with a super kick. Back inside, cover for two. Putting the boots to Sol in the corner, single knee face breaker, sets up a lariat for a near fall, and she follows it up with a cravat. Grinding Ruca down, knee lifts as she gets to her feet. She slings Zoe aside. They trade punches. Big power slam. Stark kicks out to the floor. Sol hits an Orihara moonsault and throws Zoe back into the ring, lining her up. Springboard caught. Zoe ends up winning by pinfall with an over-rotated facebreaker, qualifying for the championship women's ladders match at Stand and Deliver. So Sol, I think, was brought a little bit back in, like, put in her place a little bit more here. I thought it was fine, you know, for what it was. The whole Josh thing, it's just kind of comical, I guess, the whole Briggs thing, like how far they're taking this, so to speak. And, I'm excited for this ladder match that we get coming up. And again, Zoe, like I said in the previous episode, she's a good worker. She's in there. She's serviceable. She's not winning it. I don't think, we'll talk about that in our preview, but, I thought, putting her in this match over Sol is the right call. So what do you think on this, the backstage stuff and into this, Sol Zoe match?
Yeah, I was going to say the whole sneaking into Kiana's office was kind of absurd, but, it worked, that they're, Briggs, I keep wanting to call him Brooks. Briggs is a very good comic actor in these little segments. I think he's pretty good at playing like a not so straight man in these things. Fallon's just obviously plays the pissy tag team partner that doesn't seem to like the person she teams with that she's champions with, and she's very mad that she is trying to qualify for this ladder match that they're going to have at Stand and Deliver that they announce through a couple segments here. I agree with Zoe winning. I think she should definitely be in it. No doubt about it. I think Sol probably finds her way into it in other means. Maybe the last spot is a redeemer battle royal or a redeemer kind of four way or something to get the last spot of all the people that maybe lost their other qualifying matches. I feel like Sol needs to be in a ladder match to kind of see what she can pull off and what kind of stuff she can do. But that ring general, like Zoe Stark, definitely needs to be in this match to kind of guide everything. And she definitely needs to it's good to have her experience in the match is what I'm trying to say. But solid match.
Maybe she's like an NXT Natty. Like, you know, you say what you want about Natty, but Natty is in there to, like, you know, keep things in line, keep things, you know, in order. So, you know, maybe her character stuff may be, you know, grading and things, but, you know, I'm talking about Natty, not Zoe. But, you know, having somebody in there, though, who is like the cohesive glue to kind of keep everything together. It's really smart to have her in there. So
I can't agree with any propping up of Natty, but yeah, sure.
I'm not propping her up. I'm just saying that's kind of her role, you know, no, like a Fit Finley, who's in there just to, like, make sure shit goes right.
Yeah, or Regal. Yeah, I think it's a good comparison.
For sure. Yeah. We get a video package of a man talking about masks through a voice coder, and it's revealed to be Scripps again. We get Alba Fire. Yeah, just a mention of Scripps gives Logan the heebie-jeebies. So we get Alba Fire and Isla Dawn making their entrance for the tag title number one contenders match. And we get it is Alba Fire and Isla Dawn versus Ivy Nile and Tina Paxley versus Katana Chance King Carter. The winner will challenge the current tag team champions, Kiana James and Fallon Henley, at Stand and Deliver. Paxley with an inside cradle on Chance. Dawn breaks it up. Katana sends her to the floor with a head scissors. Sunset flip on Tatum. Shotgun dropkick. Tag to Carter. Cartwheel double knees. O'Connor roll. Caden with a schoolboy on Dawn. Double pin. Only two. High stack following press on Carter into the corner. Tag to Fire, and the European team is running hot. Tatum slams Katana into Alba, cover for two. Nile in, throwing them around. Katana Chance with a boot up, diving crossbody. Ivy rolls through and hosses her up, but Fire drops her with a super kick. Tag to Isla. Short Meteoria with a near fall. Ivy wants to tag, but Paxley drops off the apron, and Dawn nails her with a drop kick. Katana with a code breaker on Isla. Tag to Caden. Fire breaks it up. Dawn takes Carter out with a roundhouse kick. Tatum kicks Ivy now in the ribs, throws her back inside. Isla with a lung blower. And we get Alba Fire and Isla Dawn winning by pinfall with a diving splash from Fire on Ivy now, becoming number one contenders for the NXT Women's Tag Team Championship. So I like this match. And, you know, seeing the Tatum Paxley turn finally happen, I was happy to see that. I thought all the women worked hard. The right team wins. Interested to see where they go with Tatum Paxley next, whether she joins up with them or goes on her own. I have a feeling that she'll be part of this group, I guess, that the coven, as I'm copywriting TM. I better get credit for WWE if you decide to use this name.
Just send us a check.
Make it out to Andy at Place to Be Nation. I will co-sign it with Logan. Go ahead. And of course, you know, the Podfather will probably come looking for his part of the kitty. We'll jump off that bridge when we get there. So anyway, I'm not even going to ask you about the artist formerly known as Reggie. Let's just talk about this three-way tag match. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, as long as Scripps keeps his losing streak on Level Up going, I'm good with him. As long as he's losing, it doesn't matter. But Alba and Isla is definitely the way to go in this match. There's definitely the right choice. Definitely the most interesting match you could put together at the PLE. I was shocked they kind of did the turn here with Tatum. It did need to happen. They've been teasing at it for a while. Not that she kind of hasn't felt like she was part of Diamond Mine, that she was just kind of Ivy's buddy that just happened to hang out with him. It's good to see her kind of try to make it on her own a little bit. I kind of do hope, like you, that she kind of joins the coven with Alba and Isla. You obviously didn't want to see him go back to Katana and Caden going against the team that they lost the titles to. I'm excited to see Alba and Isla and what they can do with Kiana and Fallon at the PLE. So solid match, but the right winner definitely happened, and the turn was pretty good.
All right. Then we see Dragunov walking backstage as we go to break. Back from commercial, Tony D and Stax roll up to chat with Braun. They offer to take Carmelo Hayes out for him. This segment made me laugh. I'm like, what the hell is happening here? Braun gets excited about the gangster movie stuff, the old concrete overshoes or whatnot, and Tony says they were just thinking about the old tire into the kneecap in the parking lot. Braun has a little fun with him, says he thinks he has control of the situation. Tony turns to and tells Stax it's time to go after the tag titles together. Dragunov makes his entrance, gets on the mic. He says his career in WWE has been life-changing for himself, his son, his wife. They've had opportunities that they would never have happened. With every success, there's a blemish. Every step he takes, JD McDonagh cuts his legs out from under him. This could have been avoidable, but now he has no choice. To keep his autonomy and continue his ascension in NXT, he needs to rid himself of McDonagh once and for all. Enter JD. He says there are two sides of the same coin, more alike than different. Elias says that he's wrong, and his obsession with him will eventually... JD screams at him and says it's actually Dragunov who keeps pulling them together and tells him to look in the mirror. He can't quit him. Isla says pain makes him feel alive and he chooses that life. JD says he'll never get tired of thinking up new ways to make him suffer. They're destined to be together to do this for a long time. Dragunov promises that it'll end next week and there'll be nothing left for him besides a random pile of body parts and a smear of fluids spelling out an epithet. JD accepts the challenge. Isla blocks a headbutt, brawls him into the turnbuckles before Cactus clotheslining him to the floor. McDonagh gets the better of him on the floor, and they brawl off into the crowd. So I laughed at the Tony D Braun stuff because it was kind of like, you know, you may take care of this, you know, like, well, you know, it'll be our pleasure just for the champ, you know, because, you know, a couple of paisans here talking, taking care of another one. And I, this Dragunov JD stuff, I am so digging this. I mean, part of me wants to see these guys keep being the shit of each other, but another part of me wants to see them in a tag team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they could be a solid tag team on the main roster.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. I kind of see that where this it kind of ends up going. Like they beat the shit out of each other enough to where they just gain like a respect for each other somewhere along the way.
Kind of like how the bar got together.
Yeah. They would just be a killer tag team. They're both just absolute maniacs in the ring and will do anything to get the victory. We'll throw their body in any direction that they need to get where they're trying to go. And I think they're both incredibly talented. I think they honestly, if they have a match, I think they deserve like a stand and deliver kind of stage. I would like to see them maybe have like an I quit or submission match or something to that effect, since it seems to be a lot about pain and suffering and inflicting damage on each other. So I think that would be a cool way to go. I don't necessarily think that's the way they're going to go. But that would be cool in my mind. But the Tony D, Bron Breakker thing, Bron Breakker continues to just do these weird, like, acting things where he tries to do all the Sopranos references and stuff like that. And Tony D and Stacks are like, what the hell are you talking about? You've been watching too many stupid movies or something like that. But yeah, two pretty good segments back to back.
Yeah. So we get Pretty Deadly interviewed backstage. They said, they don't need Stand and Deliver. Stand and Deliver needs them. It's Hollywood, darling. We'll be on the show. And why be on the show when they could be the show? And they decide that they should host Stand and Deliver, more like Snack and Delicious. Okay. Wesley is walking backstage, finds himself caught up in the Ila JD brawl. And we go to break. And we get a Norman Smiley sighting in this little piece here. Backstage, Tyler Bate is running Thea Hale through some yoga exercise while Duke Hudson scoffs in the background. Andre Chase rolls up and Duke says he believes wins and losses matter. And Andre says he's right, but Chase U is more than just buildings and books and desks. It's a feeling, a place to learn and grow, and where he found a purpose in life and a place to belong. And he knows Hudson did too. He just used to skate along, but for now, the first time in his career, he actually cares. He tells Duke used to be happy to play poker and get his head shaved, and now maybe Chase Hughes done more for him than anything else in his entire life. We get a masked Ava Rain comes by and puts her mask on a megaphone and then leaves. And then we get footage of Grayson Waller outside Johnny Gargano's house telling him that he's going to do him a favor and make sure the door is locked. So, you know, Pretty Deadly continues to kill it in their packages, their pieces, their promos, whatever you want to call them here. You know, we continue on with the Chase U stuff again, another storyline that's kind of like, okay, are we getting to the conclusion here? It was fun while it lasted, but let's move on, people. So, what do you think here of, these things here?
Yeah. Pretty Deadly being the host at Stand and Deliver makes a ton of sense. They can kind of guide the show along, do some entertaining little skits that I know that they'll pull out. Like you said, that you can kind of compare them to the New Day. Obviously, they haven't been around as long as the New Day haven't had as many main roster bangers as the New Day has, but I think they will get there at some point. Have great careers as a tag team for sure. But they're kind of playing that role as host at the big show. But yeah, the Chase U thing, like you've continued to say, I'm a little bit more into it than maybe you are. But I at the same time, I'm kind of ready to see what they do. I feel like I've said that for most of the pot so far. But yeah, it's kind of time to see what Duke is going to do. He either needs to fully commit and they just need to be a group and a team for a long time, or he needs to kind of divide himself and, you know, go away from this Chase U way of thinking. He kind of needs to break away and be his own guy.
We're definitely suffering from storyline fatigue here with some of these.
Yeah, it's just, and I think they're trying to stretch it to these big shows and these big episodes. Mm-hmm. And you know, they'll blow quite a few of them off, I'm sure, at a Stand and Deliver or you know, shortly after, kind of reset everything. And then Grayson outside Johnny's house just said, I'm going to go make sure that your door's locked. I don't want anybody to break in, you know. So just a perfect shitbag heel to kind of just get under Johnny Gargano's skin a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really good stuff. Continues on to kill it. So then we see the roster brawling over Wesley's open challenge backstage. They flood the stage as Wes makes his entrance, and Axiom is a step ahead of the pack until Scripps dives on him. But then we get JD McDonough and Ilya Dragunov brawling through the ring, and they knock West down. Lee goes off the ropes and does a toe pick on Hiro, take the whole crowd down to size. Basically see almost the entire men's roster out there, with the exception of, like, you know, maybe like the top like 10 or so out, you know, guys. And then it continues as we cut to the back. Dragon Lee is interviewed backstage. He says he's been around the world, but this is very exciting. He came here to be a great example of the spirit of Lucha Libre, and he wants to show the world that he is special. We get a hype reel for Apollo Crews versus Davikato as we go to break. Back from commercial, JC Jane is interviewed with an arm in a sling. Says Gigi Dolan did nothing to her last week. Even on her best day, she's not one-tenth of what JC is. She scoffs at being beaten, writing it off as gossip and claiming that Dolan separated her shoulder as an intentional shortcut from the first minute of their match. And if she wants to consider that a victory, she's even more pathetic than she thought. Every second she's away from the place, she's going to think of Gigi and what she did. And when she comes back, she's going to break her heart and her face again. We get Apollo Crews versus Davikato. Crews cuts Kato off in his entrance with a diving double axe handle, punches in the ramp, smashes his face into the barricade, hammering away. Dava gets a few licks in, but Apollo won't crumble. Kato puts him on the apron for a big chop to the abdomen in the ring, and we finally get a bell. Apollo charges in, and they tumble to the floor. Axe handles to the back, big forearm to the jaw, sidestep a charge, and Dava goes hard into the steel steps, but quickly turns away, turns the tide, and gets some breathing room as we go to break. Back from commercial, Kato with a backbreaker hold, Crews out of it, looking for a slam, blocked. Dava holds him up, hoists him up, and Canadian gutbuster off the ropes, hard forearm to the kidneys, choking Apollo, clubbing away. Big knee lift, Northern Lariat, takes Crews out. Off the ropes, leg drop, palming Crews' face so hard he bends him over backwards, over the top turnbuckle. Enziguri from the apron, snapping Kato's neck over the top rope. Back inside, a series of pump kicks and him sprawling. Stinger splash follows, and then the Olympic slam. Crews up top, frog splash, but not enough. Action goes to the floor, and Kato choke bombs them into the steel steps. Apollo barely beats the count. A second choke bomb follows, and Davikato wins by pinfall with a choke bomb. This match was better than it had any right to be. I thought Apollo looked really good, and Davikato obviously gets the win, needed the win more. And really, you know, the story was that, you know, if it wasn't for that choke bomb to the steps, you know, who knows if he would wins the match. But what'd you think of this one? This one was again, surprisingly better than it had any right to be.
Yeah, Crews definitely guided Kato in this one, and definitely brought as much as he could out of Kato. I'm glad they blew this off on TV and this didn't make it through a PLE type of setting. This is definitely not something I want to see on a big stage. It's a rivalry, but it doesn't have a lot of meat to it. There's not really a ton of story to it other than, you know, Apollo came down to NXT and he didn't bring Dabo along with him. But yeah, that's about what the story is pretty much. Yeah, it was better than it probably had any right to be, but I put it a lot on Apollo's shoulders. I think he carried him a pretty good amount. As far as the stuff that happened before the match, I liked the brawl that kind of didn't end up in a match at all. I hate that Scripps got involved and took out Axiom, but I do like that West kind of jumped on the whole crowd. Dragon Lee having his first interview, obviously he is going to be important to going into Stand and Deliver. Obviously, he says he likes the idea of the open challenges, so that might be a leaning into where he's going with his first match. And then JC with the arm in the sling, kind of like I talked about earlier. I don't think she probably qualifies for the ladder match, but I think she gets involved at some point. So I think the shoulder, quote-unquote, injury is going to keep her out. To not be involved in the match as a competitor, but she might screw somebody out of possibly winning it. So,
Yeah, I think you might be onto something there, Mr. Yeah. We get an NXT Anonymous footage of Heartbreak Man Shawn Michaels chastising Wes Lee for his open challenges, causing so much chaos.
Heartbreak Man, I love it. It says that.
Whoever wrote this, I don't know, but Lee insists that he has to prove himself even more in a Stand and Deliver. He wants the 10 of his best. The Heartbreak Kid says that he can't give him 10, but he'll meet him halfway in a five-way match, four guys of Lee's choosing. Wes accepts the offer and the embrace. Kiana and Brooks are backstage trying to get contact with Fallon and Josh Briggs and failing. Jensen offers to accompany her out for a match, but she says she has to go alone as we go to break. We get Gigi Dolin versus Kiana James in an NXT Women's Championship qualifying match. Feeling out, Dolin with a snapmare off the ropes. James ducks, kicks a schoolboy for two. We get a knee and then off the top ropes. Penalty kick connects this time, but it's only good for two. Sidestep, a boot in the corner, back handspring into a shoulder block. Kiana running hot. She follows it with a neckbreaker for two. Dolin with an STO for two. James fires back with an O'Connor roll on the kickout. Gigi catches her and wins by a pinfall with a Cobra twist slam, qualifying for the NXT Women's Championship. Ladder match is stand and deliver. Post-match, we get Alba Fire and Ila Dawn jumping Kiana and puts Booster until Brooks Jensen makes the save. And then we'll pause there because we got a bit of a thing to talk about in a minute. So, I'm liking this announcement here of this five-way match. Obviously, it's not going to be a ladder match because the women are going to have one. I can't see them having two five-person ladder matches on the same card. I don't see it. So, and then we get an okay match from Gigi and Kiana. Basically, the part of the point was to move forward the women's tag title picture with having Kiana kind of be out there on her own a little bit, and Gigi, you know, getting another win with a bit more momentum here going into Stand and Deliver. So, what are your thoughts on what we had here?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of weird to use Kiana here, but it makes sense, obviously, with Fallon and Briggs doing some investigative work. they're away, so Fallon can't help Kiana with the post-match attack. So that's kind of why she was in this match. And obviously, it's a good way to put Gigi in a big spot in the ladder match to possibly be the women's champion after Stand and Deliver. But yeah, the post-match attack was good. And it was good to see Brooks kind of come out and somewhat save her. I don't think they were really holding back from beating up Brooks, but I think they just kind of did what they needed to do and obviously just kind of walked away. But not a bad match, but not a ton of time either, so they couldn't really get much going. But Gigi was the right choice.
Yep. And finally, we see Johnny Gargano driving up to his house and gets blindsided in the yard by Grayson Waller. They brawl up on his lawn, and he throws Grayson into some brush. Waller throws a handful of the dirt in Johnny's face and shoves him down before grabbing a trash can. Johnny kicks the can out of his hands and clobbers him before throwing the trash can at him. Finding up the steps to the door, Gargano raining punches down on and Candice LeRae opens the door holding Baby Wrestling. This provides enough of a distraction that Grayson comes back with punches, but Johnny wakes up and smashes him into the wall a few times. Grayson then pulls him face first into his own house and grabs a rake, smashing Gargano in the gut. Drawing at him, he breaks the rake over Johnny's back while Candice tells him to leave. He pulls Johnny up by the wrist, surfboard stomp. Waller mocks Gargano and leaves as LeRae and the baby check on Johnny. So this was, these guys kind of beat the crap out of each other. And it kind of harkens back a little bit to kind of like some of the old days, you know, with some of those brawls that we've seen, outside at people's houses or whatever. But this gave a little more gasoline on the fire that is going to be this match at Stand and Deliver. What are your thoughts here on this segment?
Yeah, I was going to say, if it wasn't already super personal, this invading a man's property, at least. I don't know if he ever actually went in the house, but invading a man's home is not something to be played around with. So Johnny was pretty pissed, so he laid in some good shots for sure. Made Grayson look very cunning and that he could pull anything out of nowhere and throw it in his face. He got some dirt in his face to kind of blind him a little bit. I thought it was pretty. I mean, he's a pretty good piece of shit, but like, beating him up in front of his kid and his baby and his wife is pretty terrible. So, if you didn't hate Waller already, this is probably a good way to cement that. I thought it was a really great segment. Really added a lot of fuel to the fire, kind of like you said. So, really looking forward to this match at Stand and Deliver.
All right. And we get back from commercial. Brooks Jensen is attending to Kiana James when Fallon and Josh roll up. We get Brooks is upset that Josh saw the bear movie without him, and Josh goes with it. And Fallon is upset that she wasn't even told that Kiana had a qualifier tonight, and Henley is further confused by the fact that they have a number they have number one contenders now, and she and Kiana bicker. Then we get Carmella Hayes flanked by Trick Williams, make his entrance for a main event contract signing. Braun Breaker comes out next. They talk about not having anybody to moderate the signing, and Hayes wants to get over with and sign the contract. Enter Pretty Deadly. In their official capacity as hosts of Stand and Deliver, it only makes sense that they should host the contract signing. Carmella says he meant no disrespect. They wanted to get this over with so that we have a new champion, and he really respects everything Braun has done, but Stand and Deliver will be changing of the guard, and he's going to take the NXT Championship further than he could. Respectfully, as Stand and Deliver, Breaker's going to come in second. Braun disagrees, but says he respects Carmella making the North American Championship into what it was, what he thought was the A Championship, because he wasn't ready for the real championship, and he wants to face the guy who beat Ricochet and Apollo Crews, and knows down deep that he's ready. Mello, don't miss, is a pretty fitting, but on April 1st, it's going to be a first for everything. Carmella says he doesn't want Braun with anger issues or the fisherman or smiling on all the posters. He wants the guy who ran through walls, won War Games, made Tommaso Ciampa tap out, and that's going to make it even better when he takes the title from him. He said, because it's true, Hayes is him. Braun believes him, but tells him he's going to show him that it's not just something to put on a t-shirt or to further his character. And if he does, they'll both get everything they want out of this. They trade compliments some more and finally sign the contract and shake hands. They go to leave, but Pretty Deadly says they can't leave with just giving the people without giving the people some drama. So Braun and Mello take their shirts off, square up, and back suplex Pretty Deadly through the table. And that ends our episode and our month of TV. And like I said, I'm really enjoying how they're building this Braun and Mello thing. You know, they're trading some barbs here and there, but it's staying pretty much above the waist. You know what I mean? There's no punching below the belt that much. There's no sneak attacks. These guys are showing respect. And of course, you know, we'll talk about what happens on the next episode on our next podcast. But, you know, I'm excited for this match of Stand and Deliver. I think, you know, Braun is getting to that point, though, where it might be too much of him, too much of a good thing kind of thing. It's one of those, like, either, you know, you are the hero or you live long enough to be the villain. I think it could go the latter way if they're not careful with him. So what do you think of, you know, we get the, you know, the continuing soap opera, we'll call it, of Brooks and Kiana and them, and then we get into this contract signing. So what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I was just talking about the contract signing. We've talked enough about
Yeah, we talked enough about that shit.
We've talked enough about the freaking love parallelogram or whatever you want to call it. but yeah, the contract signing was great. They're doing the whole mutual respect thing, but they're doing it well. They're showing respect to each other, but they're also throwing a bunch of backhanded compliments in each other, like, oh, you made the, in your mind, the North America Championship was the A Championship, but, you know, in Braun Breaker's mind, obviously, he's the NXT Champion, so it was never that case, but just barbs back and forth. I love that Carmelo brought up the fisherman stuff. Yeah. I really love that he pulled that out and called that out for being stupid, and that's not the Braun Breaker he wants. So I love that he kind of brought up. I love that both of them brought up that, like, this is the Mello I want to face, and this is the Braun I want to face. So I really like that part of it. And I like that they end up dispatching him pretty deadly through the table to end the show. So obviously, probably lead to a tag match somewhere before Stand and Deliver between the four guys. So, yeah, just a heck of a segment.
Yeah, it's funny, on Raw this week, Corey Graves says something that everybody always thinks. It's like, you know, they had Asuka and Bianca teaming. It's like, why do we have to have these opponents always teaming up leading into their big matches? And that's what obviously we're going to be getting in the next episode here before Stand and Deliver. No, I enjoyed it. I think, you know, Pretty Deadly again, you know, they play their part. They bump like for anybody, and you know, keeping it respectful, I'm enjoying it. So I'm really liking this build we got here so far. Okay.
And I love that they both were at certain points kind of looked at him like, shut up, stop talking.
Yes. All right. So let's go with some stock ups. Who we got for stock up so far this month, you think?
Gallus for sure. I think they've had a pretty good month. So that's one for me. Gigi, obviously. I think she got the title match. beat JC in part one of that rivalry, I'm pretty sure. The Coven, for sure. Zoe's another one. I think she had a couple of good wins, and she's obviously qualified for the ladder match as well. But anybody popping off on your head?
I got Dragunov. He had a good month. Trying to think. I had somebody on top of my head. Wesley, really, really good stuff. I think Tony D and Stax.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to seeing them tag and go for the belts. Yeah, I think a lot of people had good months. I don't know. I don't have a lot of stock. You have any stock downs? I don't have that many, I don't think.
I mean, Apollo lost to Dabakato, yeah. So it's obviously they're either phasing him out or he's going to kind of not be involved in too much for a little bit there. So but that's really kind of one of the only ones. I mean, you could say JC because she lost and she's hurt. So, I mean, you could go with that. But I don't think she particularly looked bad or anything like that. Von Wagner continues to be disappointing. So
maybe Ivy?
Yeah, maybe Ivy, yeah, with Tatum turning on her. I mean, you could say Brooks Jensen and Briggs and all that that crew with all the crappy segments that they had, even though some of them were funny. But all of that just needs to end and be over with. So maybe them.
Alba and Ela maybe for stock up also because,
yeah,
you know, we'll talk about this when we do the I think we're, it's coming across that we both think that they're going to be the next women's tag champions in NXT.
Oh, yeah.
I think for sure. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Like I said, we're going to have a special episode. Not as long as our normal ones because, you know, we cover four weeks of television. But we're going to go over Stand and Deliver a little in-depthly for each match and give our picks. And that'll be releasing, like I said, right before the event. It's a big weekend coming up. You know, it's our Super Bowl for wrestling fans, I guess. You know, we got Stand and Deliver during the day on Saturday, April 1st. And then we got, you know, night one of WrestleMania, then night two, and then the Raw after Mania. So, yeah, it's going to be an exciting time. Really looking forward to it. Looking forward to discussing even more with you. But before we go, do you have anything you want to direct people to? Anything else that you've been working on lately?
Yeah, just, Highway to the Impact Zone's the podcast that I host all the time. I host some of them every other episode or so. But Highway to the Impact Zone, we're headed towards Lockdown 2006. That's going through TNA. We're in 2006, like I just said. We just did the first two shows after Destination X, but Lockdown will be our next big show. YouTube Roulette, we just recorded an episode of that. Scott Shiflett hosted, so you can imagine how that
went. Oh, boy. I can only imagine.
Yeah, it was fun, we'll say. Chicken Salad and Starflation are pods that I do with Ben and Callum. Set Chicken Salad is going over the worst pay-per-views of all time, and then Starflation, it's kind of on the other end of the spectrum. We're looking at all of Dave Meltzer's five-star matches and kind of re-ranking them on the new seven-star scale. As far as wrestling feed, that's what I got.
All right, cool. As for me, primarily I'm on the Pop feed, part of the Video Jukebox Song of the Day that drops every weekday. Right now, it's pretty much me, Steve Riddle, and Kiki Langston taking care of those. Every Saturday is a little pod blast that drops. The Pixar shorts I've been doing over on Streamlabs, releasing them in pod form. So check those out. And then just like my normal mix of shows with Pop Goes the Classics, that's the Disney Rewatch pod that I host with Miranda and Steve, the Most Sensational Inspirational Motivational Podcast. I forgot a word near Miranda. I'll call me on it if she ever listens to this. That drops when we can. Cartoons of Our Youth. Episode 2 was dropped in the last couple of weeks. That was Tim Cable, and we talked about his favorite cartoon, Gargoyles, and I watched a couple episodes. We have, a new one coming soon. I believe Keithy Langston will be my guest. He has not picked his cartoon yet, so that keep an eye out for that. Traitors of the Lost Arcs. We have the last episode was about the trial of Yellow Jacket from the 80s. Our next one will be about Power Pack, I think. Tim picked it. They just tell me what to read, and then I react like a total, doofus. I pop Sean big time. Like he's like, what do you think of this Avengers run? I said, they didn't do any avenging. So, the next one, that's going to be coming up probably sometime in mid-April. And, yeah, I'm hoping to get new episodes of Laugh in Theater, Blockbuster Rewatch, and various and sundry other pods. Check me out also on Stream Lounge. I'm pretty much there every Wednesday night, 9 o'clock Eastern, alternating between 1 week I'm doing Pixar right now. The next week I'm doing Blockbusters. I have Wakanda Forever coming up with Nate Milton. And then I will be jumping in to Star Wars and starting with the Skywalker saga with Episode 4, New Hope, with Tim Slomka, who actually was just a recent guest of mine watching Batman Returns and did a great job. Tim is a great guy, real nice guy, pleasure to talk to. So I suggest you you check that on Stream Lounge or listen to it when it drops in audio form. And just, yeah, check out everything we got going on here on the Place Between Wrestling Network. Plenty of great shows. And our friends over on the North-South Connection, a great mix of sports, wrestling, and pop culture in there. Check out their YouTube channel with lots of leading up to WrestleMania video-only exclusive episodes. So in a little tease, Logan and I may be appearing, not together, separately, to preview some things happening WrestleMania weekend. So keep an eye on that as well. All right. So, as always, it was a great time. Thank you, Logan, so much for being my co-host on this. I really enjoy it. Looking forward to chatting again soon. We will be recording that after the Go Home episode of NXT Television. So the Stand Deliver card will be all set in stones for the most part, as much as it can be when it comes to WWE. And we will do our preview of that. And then we'll be back for our regular episode in a month's time, breaking down what happened at Stand Deliver, the fallout, and kind of, I guess, what's happening with in terms of reset and any changes, movements, you know, going over who may have gone up to the main roster by at this point, and you know who may be coming in taking their place on the card at NXT. Okay, so for Logan Crosland, I'm Andy Atherton. Thank you for listening to this episode of Who's Next, and we'll see you on our next episode. Take care.